I kind of guess that Polygon has a ridiculous list called the best tabletop RPGs of 2015. What are you talking about? The best tabletop RPGs of 2015.
2015?
That sounds retarded.
Let's start the show.
Hi, and welcome to the Scotchcast for the week of March 27, 2016. I'm Thurbleton. We got New Brahma here, and Cynic is, you know, about to get some beef in with Polygon about what was this?
Their inability to write good articles. They can write news like no one else, but articles, they got nothing. Unless it's like those really in-depth, like ultra-long ones, which are too long for me to read. Mm-hmm. I'd rather they be a video.
That's fair. And like of the news websites, they do an amazing job of portraying, like of just displaying, like from a UI standpoint.
Yes.
Yo,
sad world where Polygon has the best interface of all news websites and gaming.
I mean,
that's surprising. It's considering like a website or like an industry, a news industry so intertwined with technology, their websites are so poor.
Yeah. So honestly. for the apparatus of delivering news, like Kotaku is almost unreadable.
Yeah, Kotaku and Rock Paper Shotgun are just like a slew of text. And it's not even like it's text that's like some of it's jumping out at you, but not enough to notice, or at least like there's too many. It's too busy. Yeah. Both of those are too busy.
But the thing is, I mean, in some months' time, you won't even be able to read Kotaku at all. So it's fine. It's gonna be gone. Patrick Klepek's gonna be out of a job again. So sad.
Should we just go into news then?
He'll just be in Patreon. All the other news companies. Yeah. Yeah, let's just. Hey, what's new with like gaming news sites and Patreon?
So, Easy Allies I was gonna say a website about video games, but it's not. It is a group of people who sometimes put out videos about video games on a generally weekly basis. Used to put videos out about video games on GameTrailers.com.
Is there a website people could go to who want to get some of this video game news?
Not really. It's essentially. Easy Allies is a group of people.
I know you tweet a bunch about this.
Right. Yeah, yes.
I'm going to type in patreon.com/EasyAllies and see what happens.
I'm pretty sure that's it, yeah.
What is it?
Easy Allies is creating video game streams and shows.
Yeah, yeah. That's it.
Patreon.com/EasyAllies. There you go.
So that's probably not where I'd go. I just go to twitch.com/EasyAllies and youtube.com/users/EasyAllies.
They also have a Facebook page. Patreon, all three links available on their Patreon.
Yeah. The Patreon page is kind of horrible because that page that you're seeing is only available to people who don't subscribe. So when I subscribe, I don't have a good way to look at what their main page looks like anymore. Patreon is a shitty website. Either they're using it badly. I can't tell which it is.
Well, it's a website made by an artist. And like it's slowly developing into a different thing, but it's like it's just creators who don't necessarily know how to, you know, convey stuff to make money.
Yeah, the people who it's not made by marketers. It's not.
No, Jack Conte is a gem and a treasure, like national treasure. He's great. Yeah. We'll see how what Patreon becomes. But
if a bunch of like engineers marketed a VR headset, it'd be kind of like what that would.
No,
be.
It's not. No, it's not because
it's not that bad.
How the engineers do it is they'd have one page that goes up once and they'd never change it. Or they just like slowly edit parts of it.
No. In the sense wildly that it's comparable if an engineer marketed and made the supply chain for a VR headset. It's
yeah,
comparable.
Sure, yeah.
It's a mess.
It is the Oculus Rift of crowdfunding websites. Easy Allies is a group of dudes who used to work at GameTrails.com who do fantastic work. They put most of their work into actual good video reviews that are in the 10-minute kind of range rather than the half-hour kind of range of Angry Joe stuff. They tend to cover games really well in terms of like timeliness because they're still in that kind of major outlet kind of circle because they came from there. They're still able to get review copies and get reviews out quickly. They generally have really good editorial because, and their review scores are usually really on point, at least from my perspective. And if you look at user averages and Metacritic averages, if you kind of take that all into consideration, they're actually really on point with most of their stuff.
Is this Game Trailers or Easy Allies?
This was Game Trailers.
Game Trailers.
Which is now essentially Easy Allies. The core group of people that people would care about from Game Trailers. So noting that they lost pretty much all their back-end people. So all their, like, the people behind the scenes who made everything work are gone, except for essentially Damiani and a couple dudes, like the people behind the camera, like and Ian Hinkle. Like, there's a couple guys who are still in the crew, but now instead of all of Game Trailers, it's just 9 dudes, and they're together. But we're talking about Kyle Bossman, so the guy from the final Bossman, Michael Huber Hype, and obviously the Shenmue reaction videos you've seen across the internet, and a bunch of dudes like that. So a bunch of the core dudes, like Trailer Jones or Brandon Jones, who did the core thing. I think we might have actually already talked about this on the show. Remembering me,
it sounds familiar to talk
about Brandon Jones's name. I think I forgot Brandon Jones's name last time we talked about this. But either way, whatever, who cares? It's Easy Allies. They now hit 33 or 34,000, something like that, on Patreon a month. So they're getting close to being able to go full-time and create their own new thing. But for now, they've committed to essentially like 3 to 4 shows a week, including D&D, which is awesome. I'd support them. See what they do. See if you like it. Twitch.com/EasyAllies and YouTube.com/users/EasyAllies. That's where I'd go.
All I remember about them is their E3 stream. That's it.
They're the best. They have the best E3 stream business.
So what are they?
I mean, not
right
in
now?
The sense of them commenting. I mean, in the quality of their video stream.
Well, they now it's commenting. Before it was quality. Back when Game Trailers had like good servers, they had excellent quality. But now they just have commentary. They didn't do rebroadcasting last year, for example.
Okay, so Easy Allies, just for anybody who cares, just a good side-by-side comparison. Easy Allies is up to, like you just said, 33,000. Kind of Funny is up to the IGN guys, Greg Miller and all that, are up to 37,000 per month.
They've been around for a bit over a year. These guys have been up for less than a week.
Yep.
So, yeah. Like, and Easy Allies is one of the highest averages of per patron subscriber, because like people who really like the Game Trail stuff really like the Game Trail stuff, and Game Trails was such an old website that most of us are pretty old now. So yeah, like people like me, I'm obviously in my late 20s now and have a full time job, so I can definitely see
spend
why
$500 and play D&D with them.
Yeah, it's, and people did it. A bunch of people did it. Yeah, and like they have a higher age bracket audience in general, just because they were around for longer. But the main thing about them isn't that they're old. They're a very different voice in the community than Giant Bomb. Like, my favorite side is Giant Bomb, because I find that their perspective, their length, their like depth of knowledge about video games is pretty much in the top tier. Like, I wouldn't say the highest in the industry, but I'd say in the top tier for the industry. So someone like Jeff Gerstmann has seen it all by now and is able to comment it from that perspective. These guys are kind of the other side of things, that they've been around for a while, but they haven't let that hurt their hope and their like their upbeatness about everything. Exactly. Like, yeah. For example, these guys still love and have hope in Nintendo. That's saying a lot in fucking 2016. Like, these guys are like massively positive about most of the news, try to see things from a positive light, try to just have hope in the future of gaming. And that's why I like them. So I love both those sides. I'm support both of them by paying for both. And I encourage people to check out Easy Allies stuff if they haven't seen demo Game Trailers in the past. But I think we may have said this.
There's that plug. Thank you, Easy Allies, for your 5% cut of your Patreon. Our show appreciates it.
An interesting thing, and I this is just, I guess, narrative on you, Cynic. Jack Conti, during GDC, I think, was on the Kind of Funny, one of their streams, and was talking about how bigger Patreons like themselves, and I imagine Kind of Funny is this, or not Kind of Funny, Easy Allies is a similar situation for the like statistics and metrics and all that, but it's a way to get people into Patreon, and then they will, like, people like yourself, Cynic, will then start supporting other Patreons, having first supported Easy Allies.
It's just a case of mindshare. Like a lot of people, if Kind of Funny wasn't successful, I don't think anyone or as many people would have pitched in for Easy Allies. In the same way, I would say if Kickstarter wasn't so successful, Patreon wouldn't be a thing. Like it's that kind of thing where I don't think it's necessary for them to be funding something already to then increase how many things they fund or find more things they want to fund. I think it's the case because I've seen many comments of like, okay, I've reduced my other Patreons by this amount and I've now started pitching towards this. So I don't think that's entirely valid, but it's valid to some extent. That's always going to be a case. Like you always have that kind of exposure, virulent kind of exposure method. But I think in general, just the more people who know about Patreon, the better it is for Patreon and people on Patreon. So I don't know. I am not sold on Patreon as a thing. Like it's cool that we're in a world where crowdfunding is a massive way of doing this.
It's better than the alternative of seeing advertisements all the time.
Yes, it is definitely better than seeing advertisements. Of the three models, like advertisements, subscription model, and Patreon, I'd personally lean towards subscription. Like that I actually vastly prefer. The problem with that is if you have a subscription model, you don't have a method for someone to say, I want to subscribe to you for X amount a month, rather than just like, the giant problem is like you literally are either premium or gold or silver, either monthly or yearly. That's it. You just have one price for each, full stop. They don't necessarily have the way to go, hey, if you want to give us more money, if you want to give us $500 a month, you can do that. Patreon allows for that. The weird thing for me in that system is when it comes to these kinds of rewards, backer reward equivalents for those higher levels. And it does kind of feel skeezy or forced.
But I mean, it also depends on what the content creators want, for example, right? Because like one of my favorite sites, like Red Letter Media, they have a Patreon, but their tiers are only $2, $5, and $15, right? Mm-hmm. They're super low because they make films and videos, etc. And so I didn't support their Patreon, but I bought like their shitty $50 movie that was shit, but I loved it because it's like a dumb movie. But sort of like, and I think the nice thing about Patreon is there's sort of like a flexibility, right, with that model where, you know, you're not solely subsisting on that single revenue stream of having, oh, we need to get these many people doing minimum X amount of dollars supporting, but rather it's sort of like something that could totally complement thing like selling movies, selling t-shirts.
I definitely agree and see where you're coming from. The reason I'm not sold on Patreon at the moment is because of a situation like this, where Easy Allies has $32,000 a month. So pretty much an amount of money that would get them all part-time on this project, right? Everyone on Easy Allies has enough money to be part-time now. However, that's coming from like 3,000 people. Not many people at fucking all. Like that's barely anyone if you think about it, and especially if you consider how many of those are vocal. So I've already seen a lot of cases where community input is starting to significantly determine the creator's output.
Right.
And whether that's a good thing or not, I can't say. I just personally would prefer if it was like, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm making the D on what I do. It's my stuff. But if you want to support that, you can support me in this way.
Like for me, like I'm thinking of it from like a different angle of when you only have 3,000 people with a high average thing, then that every single person you lose counts so much.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's exactly. Why they want to please us so much because they,
and it's like at the same time, it's sort of people are ridiculously fickle with something like internet sites.
Exactly.
And it's not a particularly stable form, which is why I think sort of the model of, you know, just give us money if you like a little bit of money, you know, $2 to $15 or whatever, if you like our content. But this is not how we're going to support ourselves, right? This is just a way on the side to show your appreciation.
Exactly. The perfect end goal I see for Easy Allies specifically, and I don't know why we spent so long on it, but hey, whatever. We may as well run on this topic soon. Perfect end goal I see for Easy Allies is them to have sponsorships, like actual industry sponsorships, like a proper website. Have a website, preferably. Like they should probably have a fucking website at some point. And then so their community can actually have one place to go rather than just a random thread on NeoGAF and a random Reddit. So just have a website, have actual sponsorships, and use Patreon as the thing on the side. Like Giant Bomb used for their gold subscriptions. So their subscription model. And that's what I would do. Anyway, that's Easy Allies.
Yeah,
Speaking of Patrick Tepic, though, which we weren't, but we were a second ago. Noob, yeah. I really like your jab.
I was talking about...
What were you talking about?
I was going to say fucking Gawker Media sinks, and it's so great because
it's
I don't
glorious.
Know who I want to root for less, fucking Hulk Hogan or Gawker. Like, I don't know what is the worst thing to side with. In
no,
one way, I'm
Gawker.
So glad Gawker is going to stop existing, but I'm also not glad that this sort of like attention-seeking, sort of no reason to be alive person is getting $110 million or whatever.
I don't have that negative opinion of Hulk Hogan, but at the same time, I don't really care about Hulk Hogan. For me, it's more of a case of like I like seeing Gawker burn, and that's pretty much where I stand on this. It is awesome. The funny side effect, however, is it's a potential. Like aside from the apparently, as we can see thus far, stay of execution for GiantBomb.com, the Patrick Klepek curse. Is in effect. We don't know if it'll actually come to pass. We maybe have a second stay of execution, but
yeah.
People don't know.
I think he's going Polygon next. I think he's going
exactly. I'm thinking like people know Patrick Klepek. Pretty much every website or magazine he's ever been a part of has shut down during his tenure, except for GiantBomb.com. So, for people who don't know, Gawker owns Kotaku.com. Yeah, and that's where Patrick Klepek works. I want to see. Personally, I don't really care if Kotaku shuts down. Like a lot of people actively don't like Kotaku. I don't like their content. I don't actively like. So I don't hate them. I don't think they should be shut down or whatever. Like I would with Gawker. Gawker seems like a bad place to be.
It like. Kotaku, like if it weren't for Kotaku, there's a lot of stories that we wouldn't know about. Like we would find out about like half the Assassin's Creeds when Ubisoft wanted us to know about them.
No,
like the PlayStation 4, 4, 5 stuff is like not even just a Kotaku. That's like that's just Patrick Klepek. Like he would have done that no matter what site he was part of. Like the same way he broke stuff for Giant Bomb in the past.
Yep,
but like. It's the weird side stuff that just Kotaku is known for.
Video game tabloid. It's dirty. I don't know.
It's. Do we need it? Do you actually need a Kotaku? Do we need a journalist side to the video game industry?
Well, but the thing is, right? If you're going to go high and mighty about what journalism is as like the fourth estate, right? It's sort of like, I don't know. There's no investigative journalism aspect to the video game industry. You're not holding people accountable, right?
Exactly. The PS 4.5 leak is the closest we've ever gotten to investigative journalism, and that's just
like a leak. It's straight
I just heard some developers say this, so I asked some other developers, and they confirmed it. Like that's it. That's the closest we've gotten. It's not like like the Konami stuff. Wasn't necessarily because someone went into Konami and like fucking like had like a second identity or whatever and like got employed by them and then fucking wrote while they were into Konami or whatever. It was just like, oh yeah, it was revealed through some circumstance that Konami has the worst working conditions in the world. Like
it's sort of like, I don't know. Yeah, it comes down to the thing about video game or in general tech news is less about, you know, investigation than it is about hot scoops. Of releasing that news story that gets that many clicks and just sort of releasing information more than searching for it, right? You're not digging information that's relevant, whatever. It's just you're showing off, you know, they're working on a new Assassin's Creed, things people are interested in, not necessarily things that are important.
If you break a new piece of information the quickest, it's got nothing to do with how deep or meaningful.
It's like that sort of line between journalism and news, right?
Yeah. I actually think it's firmly on the side of news.
Yeah.
And almost no journalism is involved.
Editorializing sometimes. That's not
actually
true.
So, and that's the thing. Like I come
the
to
worst part about the video game industry, I think.
Really? You don't like editorial?
No, I don't mean like I don't mean editorializing in terms like reviews, etc., or like opinions about products, right? Mm-hmm. It's more sort of like when people put in political overtones on video games. I'm sick and tired of that. That's what I'm talking about, editorialization.
Yes. No. Yeah. If any form of agenda in my video game news, get the fuck out. I've always had that stance.
And I think that more than proves Patrick sort Patrick of
during his time at Spam Bomb. Not that I didn't like him. I'd actually prefer he was still there because he added some interesting stuff to the conversation. But I definitely have some issues where people try to shoehorn topics into video games where they may not be welcome.
Again, sort of into like that dichotomy between news and journalism is we just want to know when's the next game coming out? When's the next, fucking piece of DLC coming out? Nobody really cares about what you think as a video game writer.
You just want the next, you guys just want the next tasty sausage. You don't really care how the sausage is made.
Exactly. Whether or not it's like an oval shaped, entirely touchscreen controller.
Whether it's made out of people or not, or if someone or parts of a person, if it's got like two fingers in it, you don't really care.
No, I'm saying that from my news, I don't care how it's made. From editorial, I absolutely care about the other side of things. But never the twain should mix. Because then you get weird shit like Zoe Quinn all over news websites. I don't give a fuck what her personal life is.
Please take that away from, fucking headline stories with people dying in bombings in Syria. That should not be on the same scroll wheel.
We did get that for a short period of time. But I mean just like straight up. I don't need Zoe Quinn's personal life next to this is the next Assassin's Creed. I came to this website for one of those two things. It wasn't both of them. Like that's not those two things shouldn't be mixed in my opinion, but that's just opinions. I'm sure someone out there cares about the tabloid side of gaming.
Whatever. I was like,
no, if you have a different perspective, this is the time to voice
this.
I am not the law.
Tabloid, I assume, would be more like. I don't know, we don't really have any rock stars in, or famous, like we have famous people, but it's not like, someone from Double Fine getting into like a scandal. It's just like, hey,
it doesn't necessarily have to be gossip, right? It could be more sensationalism, right? In the sense of sort of putting a single story on every single news site, a la things that have been happening in the last couple of years. Just to a degree.
I don't remember where I saw this, but I definitely remember seeing a table of different press conferences and the amount of men and women on stage in those press conferences. And that's the kind of stuff I mean by video gaming tabloidism.
Yep.
Because that's not important information to me. And I think it's something that's trying to make... If you're going to talk about gaming culture... then that should be a culture kind of section. I prefer that in a culture section. Something's like, removed from gaming news.
Yeah, I think that. Like, I think if they, or if they just switched up a newspaper to have different sections, like one of which being like, hey, here's new culture stuff. And in the same way, like most people will flip through that and just go to the sports and the business.
Exactly.
But I mean, like some people like it. Again, this goes back to what we started off with. If a news website had a good layout,
hey, and that's why I love Polygon. I go to Polygon for my video gaming news.
Yeah. You do not love Polygon. You retract.
I do not love Polygon. Yeah, Polygon. Exactly. I go there because they have an excellent layout. If you just want to read fucking news, gaming news.
There's something I was thinking about, and this kind of ties into that same theory, like same issue of like. Just video game websites having bad layouts. When we were talking about the 2-hour refund policy, one of the things I thought like would be a neat topic is: do you think renting video games should be a thing? In the same way, like you rent movies, like
people still use GameFly.
Yes,
friends who still use GameFly,
and that is close to
crazy.
That's close to what I'm thinking. That same idea, but it's not exactly what like it's. This would be something different that hasn't existed yet. Like the same, it's not existed in this medium. But the other thing I was thinking about that would work great in this newspaper system style website in terms of like different categories, is like a budget section. Like, hey, that we're doing reviews, and we are basing it off of if you have $100 a year to buy video games, like, it is this game worth it, kind of thing. Like, how much of your $100 is this worth it? But yeah, that's just a weird idea I thought of. But right. Yeah, if you're listening and making a news site for video games, make it good, please.
Well, yeah, whatever. It's like first no, the like epitome of really first world need. Problems.
It's like what you really need is like a website that's like an RSS aggregator, right? That fucking just takes blistering hot news from all those sites and is good at picking out all of the garbage that nobody wants
that's
to
what
read.
N4G used to be. N4G used to be that. It wasn't an RSS ripper. It was people submitted news as quickly as I could, and then other people in that community vetted whether that would actually make it to the front page. And then it was just a streaming list of the latest news and video games. And that was awesome until the community kind of fell apart to some extent. The website owners kind of changed hands a couple times. And at the moment, it doesn't quite fulfill the same niche. It doesn't get stuff as quick as it used to, that kind of stuff. But there's a hole. Maybe there's a hole in the market. I don't know how many people actually care about gaming news.
Nerds.
Yeah,
not
that
gamers.
Many. And like, I guess that goes back
like
to
one
it.
In five gamers or less. Yeah.
People like pageantry. People like novelty. And that's why E3 is so successful, especially in terms of views and stuff. But I don't think people actually care about the day-to-day gaming news. They're happy to get it in once a week podcast form, like that kind of stuff. Right?
Do you think
most
you
people
think
get the gaming
news? That's for me too. Like, the only time I check gaming news, unless somebody links it to me, right, is generally speaking through preparing for the show every other week, right? And I think – but the strange thing is I think something like Steam, for example, has done a great job in the sense that whenever I go to my Steam library and I'm about to launch a game, there's like a news section, recent news of the game. And if it's something big, it'll catch my eye and I'll click it, right? And I'll search for it. And I think sort of that mix of having sort of a news aggregator on a platform for games, I think is quite beneficial to sort of keeping up with that. But yeah, like, don't get me wrong. Like, the first thing I do straight up when I wake up, I turn off my alarm clock and I check my daily news sites. They just don't happen to be video game news sites.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't check video game news sites anymore either. I pretty much just listen to the Bumcast and Beachcast every week, see what they come up with. And I hope for them to aggregate properly. If the only things I don't, anything that falls through the cracks is either comes up on NeoGAF, which I do check all the time,
right.
Or comes up during when prepping for the show. So I don't know if there's a actual hunger out there for stuff, which brings us back to Kotaku. I don't know if there's an actual hunger for video games, like journalism, mass journalism. And whether they shut down or not, I don't really care, because those guys will probably find work because they're excellent at what they do.
The people who are excellent will find work.
The people who are excellent.
It speaks to a lot about like the industry of video game news that it's more than any other place about personalities than it is about quality of like writing, editorials, etc. Right?
Like,
it's
like
people
enjoy. Take the – well, that's true, but also like personality is another way. If like – take the way we reacted to the PS 4.5 news. My reaction was Patrick Klepek wrote this. It is true. Like that was my thing. Like that notoriety, that the name means just as much as what they're writing. And that also influences the tone and how they say things, that kind of stuff. But that's also – the name matters. The personalities matter. That's a cool
it's definitely
thing.
A lot more closer knit community in the sense that A, like video game journalists all know each other, right? But also like people who are following news at a semi regular basis all know these names and know these personalities. Like it's a small club and it's very strange.
Yeah, it's a small club.
Considering the size of the video game market and then relative to that, the size of people who are actually interested even remotely in video game news.
Well, like that's the case for any enthusiast market I can think of. Like, for example, people who are really into cars would all know about the major designers at Tesla or the
I don't mean like people who are producing the content in the sense of like making games. I mean like
the covers, writing about it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the strange part, right? Is they're a lot more important in this industry, and especially more than
I don't
ever.
Know that's like, true, though. Like, think of Jeremy Clarkson, or like.
Yeah, but he is like a star on television. Can you name any auto writers, right, from Auto Trader Weekly or whatever?
Yeah, but I'm not a car guy, and that's what
exactly.
I'm saying.
Exactly. So it's
difficult
to compare.
You don't know if this is true in other industries because we're not deep into those industries as we are with gaming. I know for certain that for movies like Roger Ebert, like there are people in the movie journalism industry that are known to many people, like journalists in the movie. Not I don't know what you call them, writers in the movie industry that are very known. So I forget. I think it's just any in-depth industry. We just happen to be in the gaming niche. But that's becoming a thing, like across industries. So pan-industry, that is becoming a thing. The personality is starting to matter. The people, like I went to watch Batman vs. Superman, which we'll talk about later. But after the ad for the new Snow White movie, which, by the way, looks sick. I don't know. At the end of the trailer for that, they had like a fucking minute-long sequence where Thor was standing on stage, like just in a room talking to the camera about his next movie. And that was it. It was just like that kind of personal moment between the audience and Thor as he talks about his new Snow White movie.
Weird.
Yeah. So like that, the individual personality member, that's just pan audience thing. Anyway, that said, so yeah, fuck Kotaku. That's my
okay.
Fuck Kotaku, fuck Polygon.
Fuck Gawker.
The cool people from there will always be cool. And yeah, most of all, fuck Gawker. And New Barama says, fuck Hulk Hogan, but I don't
Fuck Hulk Hogan. You talentless hack.
What else do we have for news?
Are we going to go into the big dive?
Was there anything else aside from the big dive?
Well,
I want to quickly say, yeah, so there's a couple of small bits of news and we'll get to Nintendo. First of all, on VR news, the VR news tip, PlayStation VR in the US finally was open for sale. And that's for the package deal of the headset, Move controllers, VR worlds, and the camera for $499 US. And that got sold out in, I believe, 10 minutes on Amazon. And pretty much everywhere is sold out now. And I don't remember the actual date for it, but it's around now-ish that the only headset, only the headset by itself package is going to be for sale. That thing blew out doors, which is expected, as we talked about last week, but when it came to the UK and Germany. Secondly, and this is the one Noob Rama is happy to talk about, Palmalucky hand-delivered the first Oculus Rift to the first Oculus Rift owner, I guess, in public. I don't know. It feels disingenuous to me.
Yeah, it's like a child murderer bringing your dead child to you.
That is not what it's like. That's not what it's like at all. But I mean, like, I'm pretty sure he wasn't actually the first person to own an Oculus Rift. I'm pretty sure, like, you know, everyone in Oculus probably owns an Oculus Rift. And, like, a bunch of backers may have received it quicker from Amazon, for example.
I
mean,
it's the first retail
just because of the quirks
Rift. It's the first retail Rift.
I guess like it came in the retail packaging. I don't know. But either way, like, so how would you feel, Thurbleton, if Palmalucky rocked up to your house and gave you an Oculus Rift? Because you ordered one for $99 US dollars.
I think that's weird, but cool. I'd like, all right, cool. Bye.
Bye.
Shut door, put on helmet.
I haven't watched it myself because I don't deal well with awkward stuff. But apparently, it was ultra awkward, and because the dude wasn't expecting it. Yeah.
King of awkward.
Dude wasn't expecting it, and he just rocks up in his sandals or whatever, or his thongs. So yeah, it was just like really awkward, and I would kind of want to see it, but I deal really poorly with that kind of stuff. The funniest comment I saw was, did he also give a refund for the delivery cost since he delivered it himself this time? I was like, yeah, thanks, NeoGaff, you did right by me, because that was one of the things I was most mad about. Finally, in VR, so that's it for VR. Do we have any VR news? The HTC stuff is happening. It's getting shipped.
All they did is confirm what's going to be in the final package.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's kind of what you expect. Except the only thing new on that list that I wasn't expecting was them to have earbuds in the package. And I don't know why them and Sony are bothering. Like, are they honestly... There's someone actually in their boardroom saying, hey, we should pack in earbuds. Why? Because, you know, we don't really know if the audience has earbuds.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, it's not like Oculus where they're making custom headsets. HTC and Sony have fucking factories filled with these that are probably unsold. So it's not like I doubt it's adding any cost whatsoever.
Right. Yeah, it's like literally zero cost for those companies. Because it's like it's actually probably positive. They actually gain money by moving those things from their factories. So from their storehouses. Like they no longer have to store them or pay for them, right? But I still think it's kind of nonsense. But you're right. Like if it's that's the case, that probably makes sense. It's just a lot of cables. It's funny when I look at this image that New Barama's posted that you guys can look up at home. It's just look up what's in the Vive box, HTC Vive box. I think that should get you there.
Search HTC Vive final packaging list. There you go.
Yeah. And it's just like this and dysmorphia like kind of demonstrated to be like, holy shit, how many wires involved to set this thing up? And it again reminds me that this is nowhere near mass adoption ready. Because as a person who knows what they're doing, this is easy. Like, yeah, I can say, okay, that's a USB cable. That's it. Yeah, sure. I can set that all up. But like mass adoption, people would be like, oh, I wonder why I can't put this in my MacBook Air, which only has one USB port. Like it doesn't work. Finally, last time on the show, we discussed a thing, an exciting thing that we were both, many of us were really impassioned about. Thurbleton's very level-headed. Very level-headed.
Wasn't it? Was it impassioned?
Me and Noob were, I don't know. Okay, is negative?
Just, yeah. I mean like that.
Counted as impassioned?
Well, yes, but at the same time, like, show of hands on this show, like, on this, you know, current podcast thing, who here owns a Wii U? Or is this a different news topic?
This is bad news. No.
Show of hands in the world who owns a Wii U, and few people would raise their hands, to be
fair.
The one
Thurbleton, I think, is cutting to is Nintendo stopped production on the Wii U. Is that the one you're cutting to?
I thought you were talking about the... Okay, yeah, Wii U.
Yeah.
That's the one I was cutting
whatever,
to.
Whatever, that's like sure thing, whatever. I don't have a big problem with that. Like, that's like sure. Like, if it transitions to a new product, you cease production of your old product. That makes sense. Like, I don't... No one's buying
Wii U supplies until 2,500.
Exactly. Like, unless they start cutting prices on their active stock, I bet they're not going to sell out what they already have in production.
All right. So what were you talking about?
I was setting up the handheld, the controller thing that we talked about last episode, which was since not necessarily proven as fake, but outed as fake by the person who posted it in the first place. This is really cool because people at home don't know. After the show, we met like multiple times on Skype. At a minimum, me, Nubarama, and Durin, who sadly couldn't make today's episode, met multiple times on Skype and laughed to varying degrees about the possibility of this being true. So last time you actually heard us talk about this, we had seen the first post on NeoGAF.
We were like the freshest. That was like the freshest morsel of recording. Like, literally within hours of that leak hitting, or quote unquote leak, we were talking about it. Yeah.
Yes. And so what the leak was a Stewie's head from Family Guy looking controller, which with no buttons except for two analog sticks, all screen,
pretty much matching the patent. Like point for point.
Yes. It looked very believable. Was digitally analyzed, didn't seem to be doctors at all, and then finally was revealed a number of days after that fact to be fake, apparently, by the person who posted it. So essentially the original quote-unquote developer that posted the first quote-unquote leak posted a video on a YouTube page, which is essentially showing what appears to be him doctoring the image using 3D modeling software and essentially overlapping it on his desk. Which essentially disproves that image, and through similarity, because the two images that the second image that subsequently leaked of a black version of the same thing, a high picture quality version image, was identical to this, except for the color, that essentially disproved both. So both leaks for the Wii U dev kit have essentially been outed as totally fake. Here is an interesting thing, however. I just want to note this side of it. How cool is it that we're finally in an age that people can digitally master an image that would legit fool almost everyone?
I mean, like, yes, awesome. That is cool. That's also kind of terrifying.
Terrifying, because what if the government does it, right? It's like the old Wag the Dog. People haven't seen it. Watch Wag the Dog. I think that's the name of the movie where they essentially like reconstruct this like war scenario to like fool the public to get them like to politically change their views and all kinds of stuff. It's terrifying because of how powerful that means current technology is. But it's also I think it's. On a base level, it's cool. Like, it's if you can get to the point where you can do it for still images now, I can see that the future of it being able to be done for live rendered images is real. Like, that's possible. That's so cool. Noob, do you feel fooled?
Well, I feel the thing is like, despite the fact that that image is probably fake, I still like that discovery of those pattern images between the Wii U controller and what the Wii U actually looked like and the pattern images for this thing. I am still firmly on the fact that it will look. I would not be surprised if it still looks just like that fake image, because that fake image is a ripoff of the pattern, and Nintendo doesn't seem to deviate from their pattern pictures whatsoever.
Right. Functionally, it could be the same, in which case it would have many of the same problems as what we identified, aside from shape.
I don't have any faith that it will be look any good.
I mean, like, yes, I guess it was fooled, but also if anybody went back and listened, I was not that, like, eh.
Fortunate. Yeah, you were just like, bubblehead. Yeah.
Like, I guess this works. I'm not a Nintendo fan these days. I mean, like, I don't hate them, but I just, first the Wii, then the Wii U. If this is the way they're going, then like they're not making games for me, which is fine. I'm over 30 now.
I got plenty, and also we've got plenty of games to choose from.
Yeah, they make kids games.
Damn.
Yo.
No, I mean, like you. That's. I know you didn't actually mean that negatively, but
it's okay for adults to want to play games like and feel like a kid. It's fine.
I don't know what's more hurtful. It's either the sentiment or the fact that he's saying it with such brutal honesty. But that said, I think that so people at home can't see this. So what I've written on the sheet, I think last time I looked at it, was I believe Nintendo exclamation mark. No, Nintendo Dawn of Hope. Dawn of Hope. The fact that this thing is apparently proven as fake, to me, opens up a window of maybe they can do some good fucking shit.
Really? Yeah. I'm thinking this is more like Nintendo, you know, revenge. Or it's like revenge of the Nintendo. But when the thing actually comes out, it's going to be Return of the Team Real, right? Like, I think that's probably what's going to happen. And we were talking about when that second picture hit, a very, very inappropriate, insensitive, and offensive metaphor for the situation.
I don't want to say that here.
I'm not going to say that. No. But essentially, like, I think, you know, we've been... They push this image out one way or another. It's sort of like it's to... And then they're like, okay, people are thinking, Nintendo fanboys are thinking, okay, see, it's everything's going to be fine. The Empire still controls all of these worlds. We're building a second Death Star. But what's going to happen is that fucking thing's going to come out, and then a giant oblong-shaped touchscreen controller is going to crush the Nintendo Empire. That's what's going to happen right now. It's going to be called the Millennium Falcon for, you know, other video game controllers, and it's gonna destroy Nintendo. That's what's gonna happen.
That's the dark possibility of like this.
I mean, that's the truth. Let's be honest.
This reaction, this controller engineering this reaction, followed by being proved fake, thus engendering hope, and then being backed up by like a possibility of it actually just looking the exact fucking same or just slightly different than this, and that's the worst possibility, because
I think that is because I have faith, Cynic. I have faith that Nintendo is a completely incompetent company that can't create any hardware.
The thing is, I still, even though I don't like anything Nintendo does in the console space, I love their handhelds. They have the best handhelds in the business. I need the next Nintendo handheld to be an awesome piece of kit. I have hope now. And that's the thing, like, if, from my perspective, as I said last time, I'm kind of neutral either way in that, like, if they do well, awesome. I get an awesome Nintendo handheld. If they do poorly, I get to see the tears. I get to see the glorious tears. And that's also awesome to me.
I don't like the idea that there are hardcore Nintendo fans out there who've been following this, you know, company since whatever they were 10 years old or whatever in the 1980s, right? Or the late, mm-hmm. early 90s, right? I feel bad for those people. Just as I feel bad for all of those innocent, you know, dads who worked on the Death Star when it blew up, right? But this is for the good of the galaxy. No, seriously, if the second Nintendo stops making hardware, the sooner we have fucking Mario and Zelda on systems people want to play on. I'm not even kidding. That's the fact of the matter, right? You get to play Mario on your PC, on your phone, on your Xbox, right? There will be casualties on the fight against evil, but we have to soldier on.
Saying Nintendo is stopping making hardware for the good of the galaxy is one of my favorite things we've ever said on this podcast.
it's for the
good of the galaxy.
The console we deserve, not the console we need right now. Yeah. I don't know.
No, this is the console we deserve. The console we want.
This is the console Nintendo fans deserve for buying the Wii U.
Absolutely. But the console we want, though, is no console from Nintendo. Because I don't think anyone in their right mind can say that Nintendo couldn't make an amazing game for the PS4. Sure. Like, you're just wrong if you think otherwise. If you're one of those people who still, for some reason, thinks that, oh no, the hardware is intrinsic to the software, fuck you. Like, the 3DS game,
I love enough, right? To.
Yeah. Like, tell us a Sega. Like, the 3DS games I love have nothing to do with the fact that they're on 3DS. They work perfectly well on iPad. They're amazing games. If the only game I can see at the moment that does benefit somewhat from being on a controller or a mixed screen experience is Mario Maker. But even then, it's not like it would be functionally broken if you could only do it on the TV. Like, I did, and you couldn't do it with your hand. Like, it wouldn't be functionally fucked if you couldn't use a touch interface.
Yo, imagine Mario Maker with fucking PSVR. That'd be pretty cool.
Oh my god, that would be mad cool. That'd be mad cool.
That's why I'm saying join us, join the fucking rebellion of Team Real to destroy the fucking evil that exists in this galaxy. That's all I'm saying.
Nintendo's hardware division is Sith.
Like, Sega, Sith, you know,
behind the Empire.
Exactly. Sega has gone on to like acquire a bunch of big companies, and they've like varied their parties. They're no longer making fucking Sonic games only, right?
They published
RTSs. They published fucking Alien Isolation, like a horror game that's like considered one of, you know, like the standard of modern horror games in the genre, like atmospheric horror games.
Yeah.
And everybody benefits because all of those games are on multi-platform. I don't get it. Yeah. I don't get what the problem is. Yeah.
Like, I cannot believe that more and more and more and more people are saying, yeah, we should have, like, everything should be multi-platform. Everything should be multi-platform. Like every day that goes by, more people are saying everything should be multi-platform. That will never be the case. I agree. But I can't believe that exists, that group of people can exist, but also the 10 million or so real Nintendo fans who bought a Nintendo Wii U can say, no, we still need to have hard, like hardware exclusivity for everything Nintendo ever makes.
And it's not even like, it's not even like, you know, there's something intrinsically different about playing games on a Wii U than it is on a, like, a game like Super Smash. Like, again, you maybe Mario Maker is like that single example, but you can't, you know, cordon off whole genres like real-time strategy games you could for PC, etc., right?
Yeah.
And put that on the Wii U.
And Mario Maker would still work without a control. It just wouldn't be as good. Sorry, it wouldn't be as intuitive. It would be as good. It just wouldn't be as intuitive. But every other game they fucking make. So like Bayonetta, which they published, or like imagine if Bayonetta 2 was on PC. Like, and we can't have that because Nintendo fucking published it.
Imagine how many people would have. Oh man, never mind.
It's fine. But yeah, it's one of those things
we'll
where
we'll continue our struggle. All I'm saying is Team Real will eventually, you know, this is just a setback. All I'm saying is it doesn't matter if these images are fake because I have complete faith and belief that Nintendo will persevere and create the same exact product as they pictured in their patents. And that same exact product will be an unusable piece of garbage.
So the concern I have is that, and this is a concern leading towards you being correct, is that Game Informer, as part of the second leak, which was then proved to be false, but this doesn't invalidate Game Informer's stuff, Game Informer was not able to confirm whether the leak was true, but they were able to say that their sources have indicated to them that the Wii U, so the NX controller, will in fact not have buttons.
So, but wait. So does that exclude the scroll wheel on the top?
Oh God! I assume it doesn't exclude the scroll wheel because obviously it needs a scroll wheel. Like everything needs two scroll wheels.
You can't click on the scroll wheel. So they've removed the button functionality out of the mouse wheel. They just kept the scrolling.
If that controller comes out and has a fucking scroll wheel on it, I'm out.
I think the worst
case
scenario.
I'll buy the handheld, but not the
I think console. The worst case scenario is like this is just tolerable. Like it's not horrible and it's not good by any means. It's just tolerable, and enough people buy it that we have to wait another 5 years before the toppling of Nintendo.
Yes, the writing's been on the wall for a long time for Nintendo. Sorry, that's actually not true. The writing's been on the wall since the passing of the fad for the Wii, and it was on the wall before the Wii. People just kind of forgot that it was on the wall during the massive fad of the Wii, and then realized like, oh wait, no, it's still on the wall. People didn't
buy Wii to play video game. Like gamers did not buy the Wii, just regular people did, and then nobody bought the Wii.
Gamers who weren't like active Nintendo fans did not buy the Wii.
No, in the sense like the reason the Wii sold so many copies were just like people on the hype. Yeah, it wasn't video gamers, right?
And it didn't.
It wasn't a reliable source.
Or at least by the looks of things, by the looks of the evolution of gaming sales, I don't believe that Nintendo did as much for the gaming industry in terms of bringing in new people as just straight up fucking Call of Duty has, for example. It's just
Minecraft.
Yeah, Minecraft has been more pivotal towards increasing the general gaming populace than the Wii.
There's a kiddie game that was successful, and Nintendo had absolutely nothing to do with it. It wasn't even on their platform.
It's a weird thing, though. Like the whole concept of the Wii is a wonderful one, which is, you know, Blue Ocean. Like, everyone should get into games.
Yep.
However, though that's a good concept, I could say the same for, like, everyone should get into books. Everyone should get into sports. Everyone should, like, it's... Not everyone wants to do fucking video games. Deal with it. Not everyone wants to read a book. Deal with it. Like, the Blue Ocean concept is awesome. Exposing more people to a thing is awesome. But that's also a function of time and economy. Once we progress past the point where Timmy at the corner was the only one fucking in the suburb with a Nintendo product, once we got past that, which is quite a while ago, it's just already on a track. Like, gaming will grow, and that's just because more and more people have these kind of things, or a PC capable of playing games, or a console in the house, or a phone capable of playing games, and that's just going to happen. Like, you don't need a Blue Ocean product to anymore. Like, I think that vision is silly.
Could you imagine a new Pokemon game that doesn't look like it was released in 1990?
That's, again,
that would be amazing.
Again, like, and imagine that being multi-platform.
Mm-hmm. Or multiplayer.
With cross-platform play. Yeah, multiplayer, cross-platform play, multi-platform. Fuck.
Games
won't
could
get that.
Look good. Games could look good. Again,
no, they can't.
It's like the only barrier to the universal free game project is fucking Nintendo.
Well, for Nintendo games. Like, a lot of people will say that we should extend this argument to Sony and Microsoft. And probably should, right? Like, we probably should. Like, it's,
oh, for sure. But I mean, in
should be able to play
like
The Last of Us. More people should be able to play.
Absolutely.
Like,
Uncharted.
If The Last of Us was on PC, you would have played it, right? Mm-hmm. And so like, it, even though it's like slightly scary and you're terrible scary games, but
it's
you,
like,
with me behind
the thing
you
is, probably, it's like, I sort of understand the PC argument. It's not as big as it was in like 2007, but it's slowly becoming less of an argument in the sense of like, it costs money to port. The PC market isn't as big.
Yeah.
On the other hand, like, the Xbox and the PS4 market are fucking enormous. There's no real reason Nintendo needs to do that exclusivity outside of supporting their hardware, right? That's the thing.
Like, the fact that the fact that the PS4 overtook the Nintendo Wii U's 1.5 year lead in like a month, and then progressed to now be about 4 times the size of the install base over its duration. So we're talking about there's like 40 million roughly PS4s out there versus like roughly 10 million or so Wii U's out there, and there's like 20 million or so Xbox Ones. Like, it's weird. Like, if you're going by just that metric, we're almost to the point where to say, well, everyone should just have everything on it. Everyone should just put everything on the PS4. And I wouldn't mind that. Like, I'm just like, because there's a value for consoles. If we say there shouldn't be consoles, like, if Nintendo goes out of business, then it's just Sony and Microsoft. If Microsoft fucks up again, it'll just be Sony. And so, like, it's weird. Like, it's a weird thing because consoles still have merit. There is a reason for consoles. There's a reason for people to want that kind of experience versus the one plug-and-play device that will just keep up. And every game that you buy for it will work with no problems, no fucking INI setting changes or whatever, which you still have to do if you have 21:9 monitors and stuff. But, like, what does that future have to be? Everyone has always been the support of the one console future only because it'd be great if there was only one thing you needed to buy and there was no competition created for no reason. However, there should always be competition.
Yeah.
There should always
sure.
be more.
But it doesn't, competition doesn't mean anything. Yeah. But it's like, competition doesn't mean anything when one competition is constantly producing a shit product and basically survives only by the fact that they have a loyal
They're no longer competing at all.
Exactly. They're on a different plane entirely. That's the problem. Right, that's why it's like, to a certain degree, like, Xbox and PS4, they keep themselves in check price wise yeah. and sort of yeah. securing the quality of the games and quality of the tech.
Yeah,
and Nintendo again is like, it's on a different plane price wise. Although the Wii U has gotten expensive and tries to compete at the similar price range while having yeah. none of the specs, which yeah. is just mind boggling. Just yeah, so.
So what you're saying is, from the perspective of, it's creating market fragmentation
that isn't helpful to the actual market in terms of driving down prices, increasing yeah. the quality of goods. Like, yeah. has nothing to do with that.
And they haven't done that since pre the GameCube. So that's since the 64. They have not done that since the 64. And after the GameCube, they made that switch. They fundamentally made the switch to no longer compete. And I think when they did so, they fundamentally fucked themselves out of the market in terms of the useful market that I would ever consider purchasing. That said, again, if they put out a new handheld, I'll buy it. Sure, I'm there. Whatever. They
Even
still make the best
the NX, exactly like
yeah.
it's shown.
If that is the only place the next Phoenix Wright will be, which is not, because the next Phoenix Wright is on the 3DS, but the Phoenix Wright after that, That's the only place with the Phoenix Wright after the next Phoenix Wright is going to be. Then.
Oh, you know, there's a new Phoenix Wright anime that's coming out this season.
Fuck yeah. I've got it noted in my awesome.txt I've got an awesome.txt, which is like literally dates and like when things are happening. And I plan it out like the whole year. So I've got like a bunch of shit in there. I think I've planned it all the way into November. I'm going to bring up my awesome.txt. I've got up to August. And then I have a bunch of question marks next to stuff that is supposedly come out in the last quarter. But the last thing on my awesome.txt is 23rd/G, which means game, Deus Ex Mankind Divided, August. Nice. So that's the last thing that I have confirmed on my awesome.txt.
But yeah.
So Phoenix Wright anime happening.
Destroy the evil empire. Join us.
And with that, we are going to take a break and come back with what we've been playing. Starting in 5. Wait, you're Thorvaldsen. You're hosting this show, aren't you?
Kind of. I did the opening.
You know, I kept wrestling it from your hands.
Yeah. I'm not fighting anymore. I'm just done. I'm tired.
I think to be consistent.
I got drunk and went bowling last night and got up. Like, I slept a bunch, but still, like, got up and then just hiked. And then got back.
Oh, bowling.
Home.
I haven't been bowling in forever. Bowling's so fun when you're drunk.
It was fun times. Yeah.
It is actually the best. Yeah.
No, it was good. And then, like, did some hiking and came home. And it was like the thing of, like, I think we're recording tonight, so I can't go climbing. I'll just sit around for, like, an hour until we start recording. And yeah, that's my life. And now we're back. Welcome back. Now we're going to talk about, we talked about news in the first half, and now we're going to go into what we've been playing, which shouldn't run too long, since we haven't been playing a lot of new stuff, because there's not a lot of new video games, but they're coming. But in the meantime, what have we been playing?
They're coming so hard.
That's fast. Phrasing.
Who's going
phrasing.
First? Who's coming first?
Okay, Vinny.
Will be me? Me. All right, yeah. I'll go first.
Quick shooter.
I didn't even mean to do that.
Quick shooter. Very brave man.
I didn't even mean to make that. Okay, yeah. Go ahead, Siddiq.
That's how it works. I won. That's how it works. Look into your eyes and say, I won.
First to the finish line.
No, I meant the whole Vinny thing. I didn't mean to do that. But that works. Siddiq, what have you been playing?
So I've been playing a lot of non-video games stuff. Like over the last week. Because I've been back in Sydney. It's obviously Easter weekend, public holidays, that kind of stuff. My friends and I have been back in the swing of D&D. Like we hit a stretch where like a bunch of us have some free time, which isn't always the case, especially with like everyone having full time work except for one dude at the moment. So we don't get to do this very often. Like it happens a couple times a year, but this is one of those periods where we actually have enough time to actually sit down and go, okay, let's just play some motherfucking D&D. And so the thing with D&D is that D&D is probably the single most fun thing you can do in terms of like around a table board, like tabletop thing you can do with friends. The issue with D&D is the amount of prior knowledge it takes to play it, to fulfill that potential.
It's got a lot of setup time, like both with having a prior knowledge base as well as preparing that knowledge base in the way of like character sheets and whatnot or backstory, both on the mm-hmm. player's type as well as the dungeon master's. Yeah.
So stuff I'm going to go into in a hot second is only really applicable to people to whom D&D is like an old hat, like something you've known for a large part of your life. Because if you're not into D&D or if you're trying to get into D&D, I have a couple suggestions in terms of like, hey, probably start with something like Fiasco rather than D&D. Start with something where you can get used to the important part of D&D, which is the role-playing part of D&D, the getting into a character, playing that around a table, playing off each other, creating interesting situations through your character's actions by doing things that you would not necessarily do as a person, but your character would do in that situation. Your character will probably do something really dumb and it'll get into a lot of trouble, but you should be comfortable with playing that through. Or you should also be comfortable with learning to never dictate how someone else does things. You should only focus on how your character reacts to the situation, not try to affect the world that's being created by you and your group any more than what you can as a player in that world, like a single person in that world. You should never attempt to do something beyond what your character is capable to do. You shouldn't be like, oh, yeah, there's a door there. So the DM is like, you're locked in a dungeon, and you should never say like, oh, I find a key and get my way out, right? The furthest you can do as a character is I search for a key, or I search for a bone to pick the lock with, or whatever it is. So getting used to that level of role play is something I'd probably start with.
Or you spill some ketchup on yourself and then lie on the ground and wait for the guard to come by.
Exactly. Or you just start peeing incessantly and just wet your pants and get the guard to laugh at you. Metal Gear is awesome, you guys. That said, so beyond there, looking at Thurbleton, like your system you've been looking at, I actually think that's a good second step, like after you go through Fiasco, that kind of stuff. Like, can you describe what you went in?
The second system. So I listened to a lot of podcasts, one of which is one by one starring Austin Walker, news guy at giantbomb.com. It's called Friends at the Table. And actually, anybody who's interested in like tabletop, that kind of like an actual play podcast, I think is what he calls it, or what they call it. And they've been doing it for a while, and it's a very neat system called Powered by the Apocalypse, which Dungeons and Dragons tends to do like a D20 system, I think is what they call it. Whereas Fiasco, what would you call that? Like just 1d6?
Like that, it's not the d6 is never actually mechanically important.
Well, so I mean, like
not really. It's entirely different system.
The d6 determines like the 20 outcome. Pounds of a kilo of coke or something. Like it determines it does a lot of the legwork for you. Powered by the Apocalypse runs on 2d6, and like the main part of that system is less what your character's abilities are and more what abilities everyone more or less has that are just designed to help move the system forward. So it's more about like continuing a story and less about like less character agency, I guess, and more story agency. And then we move on to, I guess, the final form, which is Dungeons and Dragons, where you go completely
Dungeons
crazy.
And Dragons. So essentially we're working in gradient. So if you're looking at something like, what was the system called again in the D&D version of it? It's called Dungeons something?
D20.
Dungeon Master or D20? The actual system you're looking at, Dungeon World.
Yeah,
Dungeon World was the system you're looking at.
Yeah, Dungeon World, which is a hack of Apocalypse World, which that's where you get the Powered by the Apocalypse engine.
Exactly, yeah. So there's six variants of that, right? That's what you were saying earlier?
There are a lot of variants.
A bunch of variants?
There's roughly six that have like that are fully formed, and there's several others that are like, you know, they've thought up the whole like system, but they're still figuring out like all the different, like, you know, they're still making edits to them. I mean, they're still making edits to, you know, Dungeons and Dragons.
But if you go for any of the fully formed ones, they'll enable you to create an adventure for your friends to play in a world which matches that rule set you're choosing of those six fully formed ones, right?
Yeah.
So Dungeon World you'd use if you want to create like a Dungeons and Dragons-esque world and have people roleplay in that. The final step, I would say, in this spectrum is Dungeons and Dragons, within which obviously there are subsets, but like Dungeons and Dragons is the end goal of so like shitload of rules, shitload of freedom, an amazing way to have free form gameplay happen in a group setting in a story that you're creating as the dungeon master or whoever the dungeon master is. So that gets to what we've been doing. So we've been playing Dungeons and Dragons since we were about 12 years old. So I'm 27 now. So it's been about 15 years. So as you can probably guess, after 15 years, you start noticing both the positives and negatives of the systems you're playing within. Dungeons & Dragons itself has progressed in our time from, I believe, 2nd edition, I think, all the way to 5th edition. So, of which we've spent most of our time in 3.5, 4, and 5. Sorry, 3.5 and 5. We skipped 4. So, 3.5 and 5 is where we spent most of our time. What that means to people at home is that Dungeons and Dragons essentially started off with 1st and 2nd edition, which was insane in terms of how many rules there were. There's just everything had a rule. Like there was almost no obfuscation at all in that system. It's very prescribed.
Here, I guess, is a good, like, you know, if we're going to say in, okay, so there's Dungeon World, which is just about, like, moving the story, or powered by the apocalypse stuff. Then you get into, let's say, 5th edition, which is, here's a character, you roll to see if you hit, and then, like, the damage is reduced by the armor, or the hit chance is reduced by the armor class. Then you get into, like, 3.5, and I guess 1st and 2nd, where you get stuff like Thaco, where the type of weapon you're using is taken into account versus the creature you're attacking. So if you're using a sword against a skeleton, that's not gonna do much. But if you're using a mace against a skeleton, that's gonna stabbing skeletons doesn't really do much.
Yeah, but I think of it as like a really good in depth RPG. Like
it's armor for
it's armor for. Yeah, exactly. Like all the things are really good. Like video game RPG does behind the scenes. It is brought forward to the player level where everyone, including the player and DM, can see every one of those numbers and work to adjust those numbers through their playstyle or their character build or that kind of stuff. That is so in depth. So in terms of like going back to like where we started just for a moment. If you were to start on the train on D&D, having played a 5th Ed campaign that I myself ran, I absolutely think that 5th edition is a fantastic starting point. It is a great level of intermediate step between being too simple and too complex. It's just right, I actually think. My friends agree that, and again, we've been playing for 15 years, we're pretty knowledgeable about this kind of shit. We think it's very well balanced. And it's very well, it's open enough that anyone can get into it and not have a big problem. So people like Tabletop Adventures from Easy Allies and previously Game Trailers, they're based in 5th edition and they had a fantastic time. This is the first time any of them have ever played D&D except for Dungeon Master. And that's the kind of experience you can probably expect if you're a 5th edition Dungeon Master. Like you can introduce pretty much anyone to 5th edition. That's also what people played, I believe, through the latter parts of when Giant Bomb did some D&D stuff. They first did Pathfinder, and then the second time they did 5th Ed, I believe. 5th Ed is just fantastic. Like it's such a good starting point. However, when you have grognards like us who have been in this for a long time, we know that what we want out of a system is the freeformness of a 3.5, essentially, which had the greatest amount of books of any of the systems, combined with the simplification of a 5th ed, but with the distribution curve of a 2d6 system such as Dungeonland. So it's essentially what we want. After having played for this long, what we realized we wanted was something that didn't require much time worrying about your roles. So you can spend more time on figuring out your tactics, how you want to move around a battlefield, how you want to engage an enemy, what the world is around you and what you're role-playing in that world. So you want to focus more on that even during combat. But we still want there to be a rule for, okay, I just ran up some fucking stairs. I just got the person at the top of the stairs stabbed me in the gut. And there's a dude behind me. Oh, shit. I'm in a bad situation. If I need to teleport, I'm a wizard. I need to teleport. This actually happened yesterday. That's why I can go dissolve. I need to teleport away. But do I need line of sight to where I'm teleporting? No, I don't need line of sight because I've been there in the past. So my character is already familiar with the relative position of the place I want to teleport to. Okay, can I teleport into the ground? Oh, shit. Like, what if I make a mistake? Would my character be able to bury himself accidentally underground and just die? Well, no, that's too ridiculous. What's the actual distance we're going to use? Because the maximum range in the spell is 50. How far away from these people can... Like, that level of depth... You want rules for that level of depth to determine what our actual endpoint of action is to be, but for the actual roles to get to those rules to be simple. So, like, we want this weird, like, amalgamated system that will achieve those things. And after going through many, many systems in the past, and the closest we've got to that in a pre-built system is 5th Ed, we've determined that, fuck it, we're just going to write our own. Fuck it. So, by essentially, we are... 8 or 2 play sessions into it now. I'm not saying this is going to be mass distributed, but I'm not planning to sell this. I don't even know we'll publish it. But as a fun talking point, just to bring out, just to say out loud, because I haven't talked about video games, the act of designing a game system is one of the most fun things I've done in a while. So Thurpleton is a indie game developer. You can probably with one published game.
I have made games that you can access.
Yep.
itch.io/Thurpleton if you want to play some hot trash.
This is the closest I've ever gotten to be an indie game dev, which is thankfully not in any way linked to my income. But also, and it's purely just
open a Patreon.
Yeah,
exactly. It's also just like just straight away to have fun. So like we were sitting there around the table yesterday after a 5-hour play session. Like, okay, so let's deconstruct that. What do we like? What do we not like? What mechanics do we want to add? What mechanics do we want to subtract from the system? Because essentially what we did was we took one system, which was based on the infantry movement, World War II, D&D-esque, like mass, like things that are, it's a system built about like creating volume of fire. It's a wargaming system. We took that core and then chucked magic into it and brought it back to medieval times. So we had to figure out like, okay, what does health mean? Like how much health is a good amount of health? How do you want health to gain, to grow as you level up? Like how much do we want to use mana? Do we want to use like a health-based magic system where it's free to cast magic, but if you fail your magic, then you take damage. Like because you always want there to be a limiting factor on magic. And like all these kind of extra design decisions we're adding to it. And the beauty is that we're drawing on 30 years of tabletop stuff. We're drawing on like years and years and years of like D&D first ed, second ed, third ed, Pathfinder. Like we were looking through Pathfinder feat lists yesterday and just going, what feats do we want to add to the system? And like essentially we've embarked upon what will probably be like a year-long development process.
Nerd!
But by the end of this, we can have a system, because if we're making it for ourselves, we're going to have a system that we can essentially use for the rest of our lives. And have the perfect system for us. Currently, the name, as I've called it, is TDS Game System, which is just 2D6 Game System. But I think he's D&D-ish is what he's calling it. We don't expect to distribute it or sell it. I think one guy in our group actually does believe in us as a group and thinks that we can come up with something that's actually legitimately amazing. So he thinks that we should consider at least publishing it somewhere that people other than us can access once we're done with it. But as a core, I just want to talk about, it's really fun to have those in-depth
discussions. That's a really
cool
project.
So deciding how much health someone should have. Okay, so what is the average damage we can expect someone to take? All right, so a crossbow does 3d6 damage. Which means the average is roughly 11.5 damage. So we don't want someone to be one shot by a crossbow no matter what. So you want the average amount of health at starting level to be above 11.5. But you also want crossbows to be dangerous. You don't want someone to be able to say like, oh yeah, I'll always take a hit from a crossbow. That's not a problem. And not fear the person with a crossbow. So what do you have someone's health at level 1? And we decide on 12. So it's just above average. So the average shot will probably not kill you, but anything above average would probably reduce you to 0 hit points. And then we're like, oh, well, people still, like the reason we love D&D is because we get attached to our player characters. We don't want you to die when you hit 0, because then it'll just be death and then you lose your character that you invested so much time and love in. So we're like, okay, so what's the death mechanic? So you just get knocked unconscious. You get knocked unconscious. All right. So then it's like, oh, well, there's no reason to fear death if you're just going to get knocked unconscious and you just get back after battle. And they're like, okay. One of the most awesome things about D&D is the fact that once someone in your party goes down, that gives you a reason to want to get the battle over with so you can attend to their wounds. So we added a death counter. So once you go down, you have 6 rounds and then you're dead. And if the party doesn't finish the combat battle at 6 rounds, you're dead. So like we added, like we keep looking at like, okay, what's the feeling we want to engender by playing this system? and then translating that to mechanics and sourcing from all these years of books to try and come up with interesting mechanics. And it's just, yeah, it's the funnest thing I've done in a while. Speaking of not fun things, however, which I wasn't, Batman versus Superman. Do you guys care about spoilers? Should we talk about this at the end?
I mean, like, I plan on seeing the movie, but also you're okay to talk about it. I don't know.
Do you care about spoilers?
For this movie? Yeah. I know exactly what happens in this movie.
Okay, cool. So then we should talk about the end.
Yeah, I kind of know what's going to happen anyway, so.
Yeah, we'll talk about the end of the show. For people who have seen it, you can hear us vent about this movie. Let's just say I didn't enjoy it. Moving on. Who's next? Thurbleton?
I haven't really been playing anything new. The one thing I could talk about is I've replayed some GTA 4 with Noob, actually. I think it was we ended up doing
We didn't play. We did not play together. That's
we
what happened.
We attempted to, yes.
Yeah.
Then another session we ended up actually... Basically, I had a friend who hasn't done... He's played a fair amount of GTA 5, but hasn't done any of the heist because he was like... strictly holding out to want to play with friends or at least play with people that he knew like on a VoIP.
Nice.
And so we're trying to get that together. You've actually played a fair amount of the online stuff though, right?
Yes, I've done all of the heists a handful of times, yeah.
Have they always had the purple events when you're just in free play?
What's the purple events?
Okay, I can talk about these then. Because this is something that I think is like not necessarily new, but new for me. And it's just, it's a really neat concept. So, like, you guys know GTA 5's, like, you know, free roam thing, where it's just, you can do whatever you want. But there's, like, to get the real or the proper experience, you're in a server with, like, a dozen other people. Right. And they are doing whatever they want. They could be in their own, like, homes safely. They could be driving around. They could be, like, trying to kill other players. They could whole mess of stuff. An event pops up every like 5 minutes or so that is basically designed for that type of environment. So it's anything from, hey, we've assigned this one person to be a VIP and they can assign a bodyguard and everyone else has to
try
and kill
them. They added that system. Yeah.
And like that was a neat thing that I saw in the background and I've participated in a little bit. But there was one in particular that I did that was really memorable and really fun. And it's basically, hey, we've over the entire map of Los Santos, we've placed 120 markers. And the person at the end of like 10 minutes who has the most markers wins the prize. And like top three get ranking stuff as well. but you have to be, you have to be PvP enabled. You can't do this and be I don't know what the term passive mode.
Yeah, passive mode. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't have that set. And as soon as any person gets a marker, it's gone. It's off the map, so no one else can get it. And so you get these really like mini race competition things. Because everyone's like locally, like just in the like 3-block radius year round, you're like watching like other markers. Like, okay, they're gonna get to that one. They're gonna get there first, or like neck and neck kind of things. And you both realize like, oh, the route we're taking is like it's up high, we can't get to it, and then so one person decided to go away and one person going back and forth, or just straight up people killing each other trying to get these markers.
Nice.
It was a fun little thing it's a good system, and I basically I'm saying PSA, check it back out again if GTA
they constantly
is like,
update it. Yeah,
GTA is 3 years now. GTA 5 is it two
on
years
the PC
three?
It's on the PC I think. Yeah. It's a year only.
Year and a half, at least.
Yeah. But it's... Heists are only a year old.
It's an old game nowadays. But still fun.
Hmm. Cool. Yeah. So just GTA?
Yes. That's so all I'm going to talk about on the show.
There is a game that you've asked me to play a number of times and never gotten around to it. And I'm kind of interested in why you're so interested in it.
Langskov, the Tiger, and the Terribly Cursed Emerald, a whirlwind heist.
Yeah, what's that about?
A, it's a freaking amazing title. B, it's free. It's a free game. It costs $0, a very surprising small amount of memory, and like 15 minutes. That's all it is. Probably less if you do a single playthrough. If you want to do like the full, like find all the little knickknacks, it's, you know, 15, 20 minutes. It's a very neat game that has like a, it's, it has a lot of depth to it. Like if you try, like if you try and contextualize all that's happening, but basically it, it's from the designer, a couple of people actually. It's from a studio called Crows, which if we get into like the whole giant bomb possible names, one of which being Batman, you can really start to appreciate Crows.com or like but it's, so it has that same look as the Stanley Parable has, but it's a completely different game. There's not like two doors you choose left or right. Instead, you are a player who has entered. You start off in like kind of like a green room almost, and you go through like the one door you can. It's very linear, but you find out through a off-screen narrator that the game is already in progress by another player. And it has this feel of like a play or like a, you know, a performance is happening, and there's all like it's basically the idea of a ton of people pulling levers and flipping switches and whatnot to make the video game happen. And it basically, you know, it's more like actors and whatnot than like AI. It's nothing as grandiose as that, but. It was a neat thing where, like, oh, well, you can play the game once this other guy's done, but maybe you can help us because, as it just so happens, for story reasons, all of the people are going on strike now. And so we need you to do all of these things and go around to, you know, miscellaneous interactions or go to the weather department.
Awesome.
The writing is very, the writing is really good.
Have they made anything else?
No, this is their debut project, I guess, just to put their name out there. And presumably they're working on something else. But yeah, it's available.
Probably for VR.
I got it on itch.io, but it is available on Steam as well. And it's again, free. All it costs is just a small amount of your time.
Yeah. Yeah, and it sounds like it's worth that small bit of time. Every time I'm in the mood to play games, I'm probably playing Fire Emblem. And if I'm not in the mood to play games, then I wouldn't be playing it. And, I have no time. Excuses. 15 minutes. You guys should do what I'm not doing.
We talk often in praise, as rare as they are, games that get us to laugh. I mean, it's very easy for like joy or like exhilaration when it comes to like, you know, a shooter, Fire Emblem, like a strategy game, stuff like that. But for something of the writing and the performance to convey, like, you know, something that is funny, that is a tough thing to do, especially tough in video games. And that is one that I genuinely thought was funny and was laughing at a couple of times. So, like, that elevator sequence is really good. It's really
cool.
It's a really good game. Please play it, Cynic. And people listening.
It's on my desktop. I have it installed. I'm just being an idiot. I should probably just fucking play it during a break or whatever.
You have it installed too? Oh, wow.
Yeah. On my desktop and installed.
It's a click away.
Well, anyway. Let's be fair. I have to do a full double click.
You could you could click it once and hit enter.
Yes. I was actually going to say that, and then I was like, I'm getting far too much depth.
That is more difficult than clicking twice.
That's what I've been playing as far as what I'm talking about on this show, and will no longer be talking about Nuclear Throne.
If you hit up at your desktop, it'll usually go to the first icon at the bottom of your list, and then you can just hit up multiple times till you find the icon that you want to hit on, and then hit enter.
So, Noob, what have you been playing?
Why go through that? I have been playing actually quite a few new games that we have not talked about. Crazy.
Apparently we saved the best for last, and for some reason the best is Doom this week.
Yeah, it's surprisingly nuts. I played a little bit of Division, but I'm sort of like, there's nothing Division. New, there's no news, but in the sense like I got hooked on three different games this week that pulled me away from Division. The first one, I guess I'll start with short one, Fallout 4 DLC, Automatron. automatron. I don't know. It's build your own robot. It's fucking cool. You can build a tiny like robot without a head, but that's floating around in the sky with no arms, and it just goes around doing nothing except carrying your items. Or you could build a giant robot with like a human skull on it, with flaming shish kebabs on both of its arms, and has like a giant body that can't fit through narrow corridors. It's awesome. I love it.
I appreciate that you like this.
Yes.
I appreciate that. For me, it is not what I want for DLC.
But yeah, it's like, it don't buy it on its own. I got it because I have the season pass. Like, right. It's not... I mean, it's only a $10 piece of DLC, but at the same time, it doesn't really add anything. It adds like a four quest chain. And
Is this a chunk out of your season pass? Like, was this one of the things like, oh, you're paying for this as part of your season pass? And it's like one of four things.
Well, this is the stuff that's coming out, one of the things that are coming out in the next 3 or 4 months.
Okay.
But they have a full year's content.
Okay.
So they have two more smaller things, I think, and the mod tools, which is going to be exciting than any expansion.
It seems like they announced these two DLCs to like come out after, like before the mod content has come out.
Yes. Almost so the mod content is coming out next month.
These DLCs can just be made with the mods, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. So they have one more smaller thing coming out, and then the mod tools coming out the same month. And then they have the big DLC, which they're like, oh, it's the biggest DLC Bethesda has ever made, bigger than Shivering Isles. So we'll pass judgment on that when that happens. I guess the next thing is, I've been playing an MMO that is the grindiest MMO that I've ever played in my life, and I played WoW at release. So, and I played a lot of Korean MMOs, and I played a lot of Korean MMOs. This is the grindiest Korean MMO that I've ever played in my life. But it is also the most...
Is it the prettiest MMO?
It is the prettiest MMO, except I have like horrible pop-in and hair glitches. But it's also the MMO with the most depth in terms of gameplay that I've actually ever played. I think
really?
In terms of things you can do. And that MMO is Barak Desert Online, otherwise known as Black Desert Online.
Why would you call it?
Durin has been playing it. He got it before me, but I'm already a higher level than him, so I guess I am fairly suited to talk about it in his place since he is not here today. Black Desert Online is, of course, the fancy character creator that costs $30. It's a la Guild Wars, buy once, buy to play. You buy the copy once for $30 USD. Yes, and no subscription, although it does have a cosmetic
half price.
No, $30 full price.
I mean, it's half the price of a full price game. Like it's holy shit. That actually sounds like a great value proposition. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it from that perspective before.
Big problems though is in terms of people outside of North America and Europe picking it up. It's they IP block. You have to use a VPN if you're not living in North America, Europe, Korea, Japan, or Russia.
Wow.
So
okay.
That is a big negative.
Sure.
But the game itself is. You know, Dern told me that it was like a grind fest. I didn't really understand the scale of the grind, where it's literally you're spending.
Yeah, Dern's played like original EverQuest. Like, that is a grind.
Exactly.
Fest.
Yeah, it's like I played like that Grand Espada game. I played that Source Engine Korean game. Like I played a fair number of grindy Korean MMOs, but this is straight up like you have to go around killing monsters for an hour to level up, not doing quests, right? Cynic is making a face right now.
Because wait, quests don't give you enough XP?
They don't give you enough XP. You can't level up to do only doing quests. You have to actually grind and kill monsters.
Yes, you can't level up only doing quests. That's like the fundamental shift in MMOs that happened like fucking 10 years ago when people realized that no one wants to just grind.
The combat is actually really, really good in the sense like it's based on combos and like button combinations. So it's like combos in the sense of you're pressing multiple different buttons to cue skills, and also you do certain skills in certain orders to have combos, right? And there's a good range of sort of like grappling, etc. And there's actually quite a bit of difference between all of the classes. So I guess I'll just talk about what I really like is the character creator is like the gift from God. It's the perfect character creator for me. I spent the first 2 hours without having actually played the game in the character creator. just messing around with the characters, A, creating nice. Characters that, you know, could be horribly irradiated, you know, very bad mutations, fucked up faces, and then trying to create, like, pretty characters, which is the point of this game, apparently. Mm-hmm. But I guess I'll talk about sort of, so the combat is really good. It's actually made, it is like the perfect podcast game, I think, because the combat, it's not mindless enough. It's not mindless enough to be boring, but at the same time, it's not like you're not playing a competitive shooter. You're not completely on
right.
and like right. focused like that. But in the sense that it's like playing Dynasty Warrior. It's like a Dynasty Warriors MMO. I think that's a good example of what this is, right? So you're just like pulling mobs, you're doing your AoE, you're doing a rotation, but at the same time, you're dodging, you're rolling, you're, you know, hitting combos correctly, you're attacking from the correct angle, because you do extra damage from side and back attacks. But I think what really shines in this game, because I'll talk about the negatives later, which are crushing, but is sort of the depth of things you can do outside of combat. So you have, I think, 8 different skill levels outside of fighting, and that's like furniture crafting, clothes making, fishing, farming, trading, cooking, and I think there's a couple more. Oh, gathering. there's a right. bunch of things, and you think it's sort of like a throwaway, but it's sort of this. Well, first of all, these are also super fucking grindy. Like, the recommendation for that the community makes to all new players is never turn the game off. Always have it running AFK. You will always be doing something while being AFK, whether it be waiting for your sunflowers to grow, waiting for your fucking, you know, wow. just AFK fishing, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, in the sense that trading...
People so, ask for this. Like, people seem to like the idea. Yeah,
people like the idea of being always on the game, right? Which is strange. I don't get it.
Or having a game that has every element of this stupid little task you're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the scope I kind of want to talk about is they've only released a portion of the world that's already out in Korea, right? But it's fairly big. And how the system works is you have energy, which at first I thought it was like, am I playing like a Farmville where I have to pay money to regain energy to do things, right? Mm. To like fish and farm, etc. But that's only like a minor thing. It's you primarily use energy to invest in nodes. Now, nodes are basically like specific small towns, like points of interest that have sub-nodes that have, you know, iron mines, that have wheat, etc. And they also grant a bonus on fishing you do there, mobs you kill there, and sort of drops. And so you can invest in these nodes, and you have a certain number of contribution points that you do from doing quests. And basically, you can invest energy and contribution points into different nodes, and that will help you get better loot from fishing or killing monsters. But also, another level is you get to hire workers, and your workers can farm these nodes for you, and you can literally build like an integrated trading empire along the lines of sort of Eve, although not to that scale. And you have your sunflower farm that you're tending every 5 hours, etc., that you're physically tending and have high yield. But you also have dozens of workers farming and mining certain other things. So you're building a steady supply of milk tea. And now you are cornering the market of milk tea because you're, you know, flooding the market with your cheap milk tea that everybody wants because it provides XP, etc. And in the sense that you're not just having that narrow, you only focus on cooking and then you just sell the cooking, but rather it's giving you a chance to be able to do all of those things at once. You're not just specializing in a certain skill level. You can actually do everything and go through the entire crafting process from beginning to end. And I think there's a level of depth that's really not achievable.
It's something people have asked for a long time. Like, that's
exactly.
And it's something like, that old MMOs used to do, and then MMOs in general stopped doing, and now here you go.
Mm-hmm. So that's there. Now, I guess the big, huge fucking negatives is it runs fine. I can actually run it at max settings, and it looks very good. Horrible texture pop in. You're having things pop in 10 feet from you. Things are like black outlines, and then they suddenly appear, and they look pretty. That's not okay in 2016. That's not okay in 2010.
Is that a function of your settings, though? Is that a function of your settings?
No, pop-in is a general problem that everybody's having.
Oh, okay.
I also have horrible texture problems with hair being transparent and it looks ugly. Whatever.
I mean, that's kind of an issue with MMOs and just the thing of, like, all the assets and, like, having to have a good pipeline to get that stuff. Yeah, that...
The cosmetic store.
The internet's a thing.
The internet's a thing. The cosmetic store, armor sets, there's, like, your character has access to about 5 different looking armor sets throughout the entire game that's not paid for, right? And there are two or three armor sets that are you can pay for, right? That are costumes. They are $30 a set. $30.
Wow. Wow.
For a set.
Are they better than everything else? That's my question.
I mean, it looks different. It's not it doesn't provide, it's not pay to win.
Do they look better than everything else?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Like, leaps and bounds better. You're literally wearing leather armor or clothing, and then you're suddenly now wearing, like, gleaming steel plates.
Artisanally crafted.
Exactly. But my primary, other than the horrible grinding, my primary problem with this game is I haven't actually physically gotten to this part, and I've actually stopped leveling my character because I'm so worried. Is apparently late game, there's PvP only, in the sense that when you hit level 40, you're tagged for PvP. Everybody is tagged for PvP.
Right. Okay. Yep.
And what ends up happening is there's no level cap in this game. You just XP slows down.
I can already see where that's going.
What happens is on each server there are 3 to 4 big guilds. And there is an item on the market that is camouflage that players cannot see you because you're wearing camouflage. And there are a handful of farming spots for the best loot and best XP. And 3 or 4 guilds have dozens of players wearing camo hiding in bushes. And when you go try to farm above level 40, they will immediately kill you.
I was thinking something else, and that it was something that would camouflage your level.
No. It's far worse. You physically cannot be seen until you come out of the... So that is hopefully getting nerfed. But wow. So the basic, I guess, gist of it is like the grindiest MMO, and it's at the same time, it's like a fairly hardcore MMO that doesn't really exist. Like, there's nothing that really compares to what Black Desert Online is trying to do. And I appreciate that. That's the thing. It's, despite all of the grind and sort of, it's a very ambitious game. It's an incredibly ambitious game. And I think, like, apparently the Korean version is, like, far ahead and sort of, like, there's a lot less classes than the Korean version currently. But I will stick with it. And I think the benefit is, because it's not a subscription-based game, and because of sort of like the ability for you to do minimal effort and still be getting things out of that game, I can see a future for it, which is good. But yeah. That was my MMO corner. Would I recommend it?
Yeah.
If you have $30 and you're looking for something different, then yes, I would totally.
Hell yeah. Like, it's at $30, it's almost a no brainer for an MMO if you're an MMO person.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you want something that's different, yeah, specifically.
And again, no subscription fee.
No subscription fee.
Yeah.
And if you are, but then again, if you're like one of the people who are bad with their money and cannot stop themselves from buying $30 pieces of armor, maybe this game is not for you. Maybe.
Yeah.
But and I guess the last thing is Stardew Valley. I've been playing Stardew Valley.
Everyone's playing Stardew Valley, and
everyone's playing Stardew Valley. So
why
I guess
is Animal Crossing so huge? I don't get it.
That's the thing. I'll preface this by saying I've never played Harvest Moon. I've never played Animal Crossing. I've never even played Farmville. So this is like a completely new genre for me.
Yeah.
It's not. I wouldn't say it's addictive. I'd say it's an interesting thing to sort of occupy your time.
Mm.
I would say that.
But then it's the thing. It's more interesting than nothing, and you end up forgetting about stuff that you need to do. And like whole hours, like, oh, it's, oh wow, four hours have passed. I was supposed to do stuff today. But instead, like, I'll just do like one more day.
I think it's engaging. It keeps you constantly engaged.
It's telling that I think I have about like 7 or 8 hours in this game, and that's all from two sittings. Like, time flies when you are playing this game. Like,
right.
There's nothing particularly like magical or innovative that, like, I've read up on Harvest Moon, the Harvest Moon games, and sort of Animal Crossing after playing it, and sort of like, there's nothing that particularly deviates this from it doesn't deviate from that formula, but I think it's more of a testament to how effective that formula is. And it's like the first PC game to come out and sort of farm management.
There's two things I want to say. One, again, it is like, think of a world when Nintendo went third party like years ago, and how massive that this genre would be if more people could play things like Harvest Moon, fucking Animal Crossing. And the second thing is, I think there is a differentiation in this game in that the writing is way more focused towards this audience rather than the Nintendo audience. It approaches things like, I left my pants in this woman's room, or like there's like dumb, stupid, like, I'm not sure how, I haven't played myself, I'm not sure how overt it is, but
it's
definitely
not that
has, like,
gaudy. Adult. I mean, the thing is, there is marriage and children in this game. That's apparently a thing, and it's like, you get enough hearts on certain eligible villagers, and then et cetera, whatever, they'll come live with you and they'll be your spouse. It's more for me like, well, I say it's more for me about farming. That's a lie. I just caught myself lying, because I just remembered playing that game and just being focused on getting as many, just being remembering. It's like, I got to wake up early. I got to go to this girl's house before she wakes up in the morning and start fishing. So as soon as she gets out, I can give her the gift for the week, right? And then immediately later, I know the other girl I'm pursuing schedule on the other side of town is 2 hours later that she wakes up, or before I can go into her house.
You're min-maxing.
So I'll start fishing. Exactly. So I can start fishing, and as soon as I get the fish that I can gift her, I'm going to go into her house and gift her the fish. And then I'm okay. And then I'll talk to other villagers that I'm sort of probably going to pursue. This doesn't work out. Their storylines are particularly interesting. I'll just talk to them and keep the points going. And then I'll go back and I'm like, oh, fuck, I forgot to water my plants. So I'll water my plants. And then it's like, oh, my God, I have to go to sleep. Otherwise, I'm going to pass out in the forest and then lose all my shit. So I go to sleep and then I wake up and the cycle is renewed. So, yeah, that's what I've kind of been doing. I haven't really been focused on farming. My farm is actually kind of a wreck. And it's like, there's nothing plant. I'm more focused on sort of giving gifts and trying to.
I think that honestly is what it is. Like, it's.
Yeah,
because that's the relationship building half of the, that's the Animal Crossing half of this game, which is like you building these relationships with the town.
Oh yeah, it's like going to the town going into the town, checking the calendar, and being like, it's this person's birthday. I need to get the person the gift, or it's the festival. Here's some chances to raise up hard points. The most heartbreaking part is they put like a dancing winter, like spring festival very early on in the game. And I'm like, sick, I can ask one of the characters to dance with me. And then like, I ask the character and she's like, I don't want to dance with you. Get out of my face.
What?
And I felt like a rejection that I've never received in my life. Like to that degree, like, oh my God, what the fuck? Straight up, I said, what the fuck? Right, I was kind of shocked that it happened to me. And then it, like, the nasty thing is, I searched it up. It's like, you need 4 hearts to be able to ask someone to the dance. But you can't get conceivably get 4 hearts that early in the game. So it's just to be like, have the person you're pursuing tell you to fucking be like, I don't want to dance with you, you're fucking gross.
And that's the stuff I was talking about earlier, where like, I wasn't just talking about sex. I mean, like, the stuff this game does is definitely more on the side of not everything will work out your way, or like, and it's more realist than an Animal Crossing or Harvest Moon. And I love that. That sounds so cool. Like a more like westernized, I'd say, because that's definitely a line in the sand that is drawn frequently between Eastern and Western games. Version of that formula. That's awesome. And it's one dude. You freaking made it.
And it's like the overarching sort of thing is there's a dungeon that you can fight monsters in, whatever. But there's also like you can sort of revitalize the farming town, etc. Or you can buy your goods cheaply at the big company that's like an Amazon or a Walmart thing that's also in the town, right?
Basically, rather than Undertale having a pacifist or regicide run, this game has a thing of are you going to be good to the community or a dick to the community? And like Noob was saying, with the whole Supermart, whatever, moving in, that starts, I think, with deciding to destroy the community center, right?
Yeah. Well, it's like if you get like a membership there at the Super Costco or whatever, it's you do not get to revive the community center, right? It's like it starts like a chain of choices. But yeah, it's interesting. Like I've only gotten to summer now because it's like a full month.
Oh, you've only done 1 year?
Is a season. I've only done one season.
Okay, I have friends who are like 2 or 3 years in. Like they have kids.
Exactly.
And yeah, it is.
Yeah, holy there's still shit. Things happening. Yeah, they're still updating things into.
What do you mean they?
Further.
It's him. It's
him.
One dude.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, it's just one dude. Yeah, it's crazy. And the best part is like it's moddable. There's mods already out for it. Although some of them are pretty gross. But yeah,
I love how this conversation dovetails into a conversation. But I think we had like literally last week or the week before about like indie games and whether we're sick of indie games. Yeah. And I think the sentiment was, the sentiment was, we're not sick of indie games for indie game's sake. We're sick of like meaningless or throwaway games that don't necessarily have much depth. This is a fantastic example of an indie game made by one fucking dude with like hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of depth and content and amazing stuff. I'm not saying that this is the minimum bar that we should set. But it's an example of like, this is what we mean. This is a game that I love is successful because it's clearly successful. Everyone's playing it. And it's like, and it's why I get angry when I see another fucking, like, when I see half the Oculus fucking
Rift.
So when I see half the Oculus Rift games, I get angry for this reason. It's because you could do something like this. I know, obviously, we wouldn't hit the release date or whatever, but
it doesn't even have to be this vast. It could be something like Selfie Tennis, which is not on Oculus Rift. Yeah,
hashtag Selfie Tennis, which is fantastic. Yeah, just make it creative, and the best case scenario is have it have depth. Because this and Factorio is another fantastic example where it's like,
oh yeah, my friends are playing Factorio. Yeah, they're doing 8-hour sittings of co-op Factorio, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, and that's just build a game with depth, and that's I'm so fucking over stupid little throwaway games just in general.
I don't know, Thurb, if you want to say something or something just happened.
No, it's just the whole concept of just like you guys are right that people want those games with a lot of like a ton of time, whereas I'm finding, especially now, like we're getting into the warm months, like there's less and less time I can set aside for video games, and like, man, I really like Dr. Langoskov, The Tiger and the Terrible the Cursed Emerald, a 15-minute game that I just super loved. And like,
oh yeah, but
that's a 15-minute game with depth. I don't necessarily say that I need something to study.
We can agree on depth, but it doesn't, doesn't necessarily equate to a huge amount of playtime.
Yeah.
No.
One of my games all time is To the Moon, and that's a 4-hour game. So,
Nope.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, it's not the time length. It's all about sort of the uniqueness and sort of being different and not just following the trends of platformers, etc.
I think it's actually more than that. I think it's the fact that he's created a system of multiple interlocking parts that you need to spin. Same with Factorio. It's a deep system because it. Like whether we're talking about like building a factory or keeping all your relationships optimized and in check, getting a person, dancing with a person at the next Harvest Festival. It's whether it's like one or the other, it's a system where you are as the player engaged by all these systems that are interlocking. Like you're talking about a farming system, a battle system, a personality, like a relationship system, a trading system, like all those systems are already built into, what's this game you're going to call it? I was going to call it Harvest Moon.
Stardew Valley.
Stardew Valley. Like, all the systems are built in Stardew Valley. That's what I mean by, in this case, that's what I mean by depth. Like, in terms of To the Moon, it's the depth of the message. But in this case, I mean, like, that's what I mean. Like, something that's meaty. It's something to dig into. Whether this game was only 10 hours long or 30 hours long, it didn't necessarily matter, because the enjoyment you get on a minute-to-minute basis is generated by the depth of, in this case, the mechanics. And that's what I'm looking for.
Well,
not necessarily.
That's the one of my beefs with this game, and I guess the Harvest Moon type of game, is this isn't necessarily a meaty game. It's a game with, like, tofu. It's like tofu meat. Because what are you getting at the end of this? Like, you've spent one season. I would be curious to see what your critique of it is, like, after a two-year gameplay kind of thing. Like, not too
real
life.
Well, I think, my existing critique is, like, it speaks to more of the limitations of the one-man development team, in the sense that even though, you know, it equates to, like, 1 month, sort of 30 days is one full season, is like how they treat it. Like, even then, that season feels fairly empty. Like, I you have those rote things of me going to that girl and being like, here's your gift for the day. You have that. But it's sort of like, other than that and, like, watering your plants, there's sort of a sense of, maybe it just, I'm not playing the game correctly, but there's like, okay, it's just waiting until the next thing happens, sort of the next big festival date. And it's sort of that sparseness of things to do. But I think that is, again, more about the development time and sort of the limitations of the one-man team. But other than that,
also, it's like, just sort of what you've chosen to engage with as a player. Like, you're not doing any of the dungeon stuff, like, for example.
I'm visiting the dungeons, but it's sort of like, there's a certain repetitiveness to that, right?
At the end of the day. Well, there's a certain repetitiveness to all of it, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, the thing that makes it so successful is, despite that, you keep wanting to do the same thing. It's not a barrier.
Is it because you care? Like, when you said it earlier, like, whether the storyline plays out with this chick and whether you want to actually, like, partner with her or whatever. Is there writing behind each of the characters? Because in itself, that could be, like, what you get out of this game.
I think part of it is there's a charm to it. It's like, oh, you know, all of the characters in the farm, you get to know them. Like, but the problem is, again, the limitation is they always say, you know, there's a handful of lines they'll talk to. They'll say every day that's sort of repetitive. And there'll be something different when there's, like, an event that happens and you get to know them better. But at the same time, it's sort of, oh, okay, I've seen this. I know what the text is. And it becomes just going through the motions of doing whatever. There's nothing new by the end of the month, right? That's the problem.
But those certain events that you get to know
them
better.
You get to get
that is what
different.
You get out of it. You do get to know these characters.
And I think the part of it is, it's less about having the enjoyment now and preparing for, you know, you're investing into this relationship. You're investing. So literally a farm metaphor would be you're planting the seeds of your crop so you can, you know, do your harvest. And that's when, you know, the next romance event happens. Right.
Right. So, or whatever.
And that is enough. And I think that's, like, the perfect metaphor. Sort of, you are constantly chipping away at sort of preparing for that big harvest. Because there are plants that take, like, two seasons to fucking grow, like an apple tree, right? Mm-hmm. I don't get to see that until fall because I planted that in the spring. So the entire summer season, I'm just watching it grow. And there's nothing for me to do. And you can't really do anything about it.
That's kind of cool. I don't know. Yeah.
And it's like a long-term investment. And I think that's what this game is. It's like, it's all about investing into your farm, investing into your whatever. Because nothing happens quickly in this game. Even the quickest plants take 3-4 days to grow. Right, and that's about 20 minutes of your day. Yeah, that's good. I recommend it. Absolutely. It's so cheap. Like, it's like $20.
I understand that, like, this game has got its claws deep into a lot of people. But it's the thing of, like, yes, there is that loop, and you're getting, like, a really good endorphin setup, like, rush with all that. But then, like, once that is done, and, like, you've sat back and, like, finished playing the game, like, Is that part worth it? And that's maybe probably something you can't answer right now because you are
I'm not at that point. Yeah.
Are you asking what the end game is of Stardew Valley?
No,
is that what your question is? Because that's disturbing.
Well, no, it's not the end game in the sense of, like, the feeling of satisfaction, I think, what you're trying to say, right? Accomplishment.
Well, you're on a train ride. You're on a train ride and you're having a great time on this train. You've never been on a train before. is the destination you're going to be worth it? Yep. Or is this is this more about the journey than the destination? And then like is this a one horse train in that will you want to play another game like Stardew 5 years from now or something because you've already experienced, like, you're saying you're loving this game because you have never played Farmville or anything like it, or Kingdom, whatever
Animal
the Nintendo
Crossing?
Game, whatever the Nintendo game,
Animal Crossing and Harvest Moon.
Harvest Moon. Like, is it because you've never played those, that's why you were enjoying this, where someone who has played Harvest Moon would be like, oh yeah, this is neat, and like maybe go down it, but like not get as much of it. Like, for them, it's more of a nostalgia thing.
Yeah. Well, that's, again, yeah, you're right. That is an extremely difficult question to answer, considering how much I've played. Yeah.
I used to play a ton of shooters back when I was in like college and whatnot, and I had like all that free time, and I was just a different person back then. And now that I've done those things, and I'm older, those things are less appealing to me, like perhaps because I've done them, but it's just like those aren't worth my time. And so that is... I'm wondering why so many people are playing this game so much. And it's like, I'm an old man now. Get off my lawn.
And it's like literally, about it. There's nothing, there's no instant gratification in this game. That's the thing. It's, you're constantly chipping away at some point, this apple tree is going to sprout 60 days down the road and it's going to be worth it. It's going to be worth me spending 3,000 coins on it. And it's going to be worth me watering it every day. Right. So if you're looking for that sort of game where you're trying to get sort of the journey is as fun as the destination, then this is probably not it, because I don't think anything in the journey is particularly interesting, simply because, again, like, there's not enough things that are happening in terms of character development or whatever gameplay that's unique enough. But it's sort of, there's something gratifying when all of your plants are sprouting and then you go down to the market and you sell everything and suddenly you have all of this money and then you buy, you know, new gear, you buy new tools, and you're sort of slowly building up. So I think this is sort of like a destination more than the journey, right?
Okay.
And just you go,
but the longer, destination is like a mini destination kind of thing. It's little.
Yeah, it's a mini destination. You're constantly taking mini journeys. Some are longer than others, and your destination enjoyment is proportional to how long your journey is, I guess.
Okay.
But yeah, it's again, it's like, it's a fun little game. I'm not going to say this is like a Fallout or even a Harvest Moon, apparently, because just the sheer amount of things you can do will never compare to a big budget studio game or whatever, right? And I hope that, you know, this being very successful sort of brings in more games like it with characters that, you know, maybe it will be enjoyable, other than, you know, hoping that this girl will accept my advances. You know, it's worth waking up at 6, going through, watering my plants, standing outside of her fucking trailer fishing until she comes out, and then giving her gift and doing the daily conversation. And it would be nice if there was something different, for sure. I would agree with that.
Man, one day I will get you to play Persona. One day. fucking. Because, like, again, like, God, like, a lot of these things are existent in so many games that you haven't had the chance to experience that because they're on PC. And that's like an annoying thing of the last 15, 20, 30 years of gaming, that there's all these things out there that people who only played on console didn't see, or people who only played on PC didn't see. And like that now, like, we're getting, you can't emulate a PS3.
You can emulate, Persona, I can emulate PS2.
Yeah, you can emulate Persona 4 PS2, but the one you want to emulate is the Vita version, Persona 4 Golden, which is, you can't, because there's no Vita emulator yet. But stuff like that. But that's not the only example. There's other stuff, right? So, like, and a lot of N64 games still don't emulate very well. Like, they emulate, but they don't emulate very well. And Wii games are, I'd love to play the Xenoblade Chronicles X on anything but the 3DS, new 3DS, which I don't have. But the Wii emulator, like,
Dolphin's not that good. I thought Dolphin was doing good work.
No, Dolphin's good, but it's even better if you have Wiimotes, which I don't have. With an actual controller, you're playing that game with a control scheme that wasn't necessarily designed for.
Okay.
Which, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily want.
But Noob, you have any other games? Or like, I think feel like we're wrapping up, right?
Oh, okay. Or, yeah. One other thing.
Can we get the Batman
versus... this yet?
Oh, okay.
There's a Love Plus Plus translation going. I don't know if I talked about it. I might have talked about this already, but yeah, what? I'm going to be playing Love Plus Plus soon. That's the HD version of Love Plus. And I think it's just to tie it in quickly with Stardew Valley. Pardon? No. It's they're just doing a translation project for the DS version, 3DS version of it. So I'm just going to play it on an emulator.
Yeah. Yeah. 3DS is a good. I can confirm.
But just quickly to tie in, it's sort of like Love Plus is a good example of sort of the journey being more fun than the destination. Because it's not, the game stops being fun for me once I'm in the relationship with the girl, because it's sort of like there's nothing you're working towards. You're just setting up dates and then doing nothing, right? It's sort of it becomes boring, right? There's no story.
Turns out she's not actually a real person, and you can't actually have real.
No, and it's sort of like you can only go on so many fake zoo dates with this virtual girl before you realize, oh my god, this is fucking depressing. My life sucks. I hate it. Right? But yeah. I'm excited for the HD version. It's going to look a lot better than the fucking shitty DS version.
Yeah, cool. That's
tell us about Batman. Tell us about after credits.
Yeah, so we'll do plugs and then talk about Batman versus Superman starring Wonder Woman. And the dude from the Facebook movie. Jesse Eisenberg. But yeah, it's or Scott Pilgrim. I guess he's also comic book characters all around. So yeah, plugs. Noob Rama, starting off, any plugs from you?
PC Gaming Hub. And I would actually plug... There's actually nothing to plug. I don't know why I said that. Never mind. PC Gaming Hub. That's it. There you go.
Okay.
Cool.
Cynic?
Easy Allies. Okay. It's going to be a plug for next week. Well,
Patreon.com/EasyAllies.
Yeah. Easy Allies is cool. Also, if you want a website to support that is a bit more established and has consistent, excellent content, giantbomb.com, premium.
Oh, if we're going to do that, just going to quickly plug Red Letter Media. There you go.
Yeah.
Buy their DVDs. They're funny.
Sure. I just say that because Vinnie Vania is getting so good.
Yeah.
Right now.
It's always weird seeing like on their main video tab or like the main video drop down, like all the endurance runs basically. Like all like it's Metal Gear Scanlan, Kerbal Project Beast. It's like these things are like 12, like Metal Gear Scanlan's getting out there, but like game tapes and like it's the video drop down is becoming bigger and bigger.
So yeah. And it's great. Especially when it's viewed through quicklookcareer.com. Yeah. But my plug, yeah, this week, my actual plug, yeah. Patreon.com/EasyAllies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then my plug is actually going to be where I end up getting a PDF for Dungeon World. And if you are just looking, this might be a bad thing. It depends if you enjoy going down rabbit holes. DriveThruRPG.com, like drive, THRU, RPG.com. It's basically where if you are curious about maybe getting a engine to play a tabletop game, they probably have it in PDF form. It's anywhere from like $1 all the way up to like, $25 if it's like official like Shadowrun or D&D kind of stuff. Shadowrun Rigor 5.0 is $50. It's on sale for $25. Man. Looking at their different prices. But yeah, that's a thing. So yeah,
nice. Yeah, again, for people to summarize our list from earlier, for people who are interested in tabletop shit, start with Fiasco, then move on to something more like the Dungeon Master, also Dungeon World and similar, and then move on to 5ed, and then go deep with 3.5. If you really want to go deep, D&D 3.5 is the place to go.
Fiasco is also available on DriveThruRPG for $12, and this is. It's the internet. I'm sure you can find ways, but as we talked about during the Patreon thing, if you want to support people making cool things, this is how you can do it. Go to DriveThruRPG, go to patreon.com, Thanks for listening.
Are we back? Are we back from the break?
Welcome back. We're talking now. So before we go out, I've only seen the trailers, and I really starts off. I don't know the exact timeline of all these things. I just know the rough pacings. There are people who are super afraid, as well as people who super revere Superman, and he doesn't know how to react to his newfound fame / hatred. It's the whole Superman, can we trust him? Ben Affleck, Ben Huflecht, aka Batman, aka Bruce Wayne, aka Daredevil, was there when the Dragon Ball Z fighting happened for Man of Steel. And he sees the danger that this Superman can possess.
Is that in the previous book? Because I need to remind people, this is a spoiler discussion.
Yes,
I will go into spoilers. I don't know if you're
in the trailers. There is Ben Affleck holding some kid in the street while looking up, and then it cuts to Superman plowing through a building, fighting what's his face, Zod.
Yeah, Zod. And
so it's like, oh, they're trying to create a whole 9/11 feel with that. Okay, whatever. The one thing from the trailers I've picked up that is absolutely true about Batman playing about Ben Affleck being Batman and just like great acting is Batman is an old super paranoid person.
Yes, and an angry ass old
and like
man.
In the comics, he has like several plans about how to defeat Superman, and like it's the joke that Batman always carries kryptonite in his utility belt. Because he never knows when he's going to have to take out Superman. And in the trailers, that is expressed with just like, if we think even like 1% chance that this guy is going to go evil, we need to have a plan and we need to stop him. And then Lex Luthor, Jesse Eisenberg shows up and has the idea to try and pit Batman against Superman. I don't know how he does it, but he does it.
I'll tell you, but not now.
You will later. And this is me just predicting the movie. So those two start fighting. It's not going to be enough. And either at some point, Jesse Eisenberg, aka Lex Luthor, picks up Zod's body and mutates it into this other supervillain that is just this, like, unstoppable but also stupid hatred machine. And so while the two of them are fighting, Jesse Eisenberg sticks the what's his face on him. And that's when Wonder Woman shows up to help stop him, and the three of them defeat the bad guy, and then they form the Justice League. Roll credits. Also, maybe Jesse Eisenberg gets stopped, or he probably gets away, because they have to set up for another movie.
You know what? Even though the villains get away, this movie is predictable, I'd have preferred that to what was actually shown on screen.
Oh, okay.
Numerama.
How close was
that? How much do you actually know about what happened? Do you know everything?
Well, I know the movie is a fucking mess. I know what the ending of the movie, what happens. Okay. I've seen Man of Steel, and I've seen other Zack Snyder films.
Was Man of Steel Zack Snyder?
Yeah, Man of Steel was Zack Snyder. It was loud. It was pointlessly dark. It was. Mm-hmm. He is like Michael Bay. He is what edgy people think good. He makes edgy people Michael Bay movies.
He's Michael Bay without the camera work. It's different camera work, but
he's like Michael Bay without the camera work. He likes big explosions, but he sort of thinks he's better than that, right? He thinks he's making art when he's really making like fucking cow manure that is in a darker tint.
It's like less cuts and different lenses. But it's different the same level of just like grandiose,
crazy. Yeah, grandiose, like destroying things. Like you said it right when you said Dragon Ball Z fight at the end of Man of Steel from Dark Batman's point of view. It's mm-hmm. like, it's ridiculous how mm-hmm. awful that movie was.
Yeah.
Man
of Steel is. Okay. So, for people listening, you've probably heard this movie being shit on a lot. That will continue. I need to just warn you now. You've also probably heard that it is the worst movie ever made. That's not true. It's not the worst movie ever made. It's not the worst comic book movie I've seen. Because I've seen Catwoman or bits of Catwoman. That's fucking... It's not Catwoman bad. Nothing is Catwoman bad. Catwoman still is that gem of perfect, crystallized, terrible that will never be touched, at least at this stage. However, to set the tone for this conversation, I need to say that even people amongst my friends who found the previous fucking shitty Superman movie enjoyable didn't like this one.
I thought the previous, as I just said, with my idea of what the movie was, I thought the Man of Steel was an amazing Dragon Ball Z movie.
Can I just preface by saying I hate Zack Snyder and I like Transformers films more than I liked the last Man of Steel movie. I would rather sit and watch Transformers than
This was in fact worse than all the Transformers movies.
Exactly. Because Transformers, it's like the Zack Snyder movies are like if you took a Transformers movie and made it like a single close up on all of the people's faces, you have no wide shots. You have no establishing shots. You just have just close on the face. Just do. And then you increase the bass levels on all of the sound effects, and then you drained all of the pictures of color.
Oh, man,
that is what a Zack Snyder film is. And that is what Man of Steel was. And this is what Batman is. Batman versus Superman.
So I'm not gonna go to a beat by beat plot thing. But I'm tempted to do, but I tell the thumbnails to get to sleep, and I don't want to take this video too long. But I will point out some critical failures this film made that are indicative of a larger problem with the overall problems of this film. First and foremost, jumping off your point of music, there are multiple times during this movie where the music cue is ludicrous to the point where I burst out laughing.
Is it the techno music?
No, it's not even that. It's just like, take the moment of him grabbing that little girl and saving her from the collapse of Wayne Tower. So at the start of the movie, you see one of the Wayne Towers in New York City, in this case, the
Metropolis
City. Wayne Tower collapse. Because he gets literally fucking cut in half and shit by laser eyes, right?
So
or whatever.
He saves a little kid while watching all the people he knows and works with probably end up dying because a tower falls over.
Well, yeah, no, so he touches down and he's in his car and he's driving through the fucking city and shit's popping off, and that's actually fucking awesome. Like, if the rest of the movie was this level of intensity and this well cut, it would have been amazing. I actually really enjoyed the intro. So he's driving through the city, streets keep getting blocked off Last of Us style, the fucking things crashing and shit, and going around corners and stuff, and he finally gets to the last stretch straightaway before he can get to Wayne Tower, and there's a massive traffic jam because you can see the fighting happen in the distance, and you see just off-screen laser fire going cutting through Wayne Tower, and you see two towers, twin towers style, Wayne Tower falling. But this whole time, Bruce has been on the phone trying to get people to evacuate from Wayne Tower. So you see the people, some of the people he was on the phone with, in the tower, watching as the tower just starts to fall, and then you just see from the outside the tower fall. And then after that, he walks up to the wreckage and starts trying to help people. That whole sequence was absolutely really great filmmaking and really great comic book movie shit, of that juxtaposition of real life fears and problems and horrible events with comic book craziness of it's being caused by two aliens flying through the sky shooting laser beam eyes things. Perfect comic book awesomeness. So going back to music cues, so he goes in, saves a little girl in the most obvious way possible, literally leaps through the air, grabs her, and does essentially a comic book roll as some massive piece of a building falls where she was previously standing. That stupid level stuff. But then he looks up in the sky and sees Superman and Batman, like, so well, not Superman, Batman, Superman and Zod fucking, yeah, like, battling, and then you get this giant, like, and then it's like, he's like, look, and he's like, he has like serious face on, and it's like, I hate you now, like, this, I hate you now face on, and it's like, massive swelling orchestral fucking thing comes out of nowhere, and like, and just like surrounds this moment and makes it just ludicrous, just makes it bad, like, if you just have the cinematography, it would have worked. But there's multiple moments in this movie where the music cues are just like Lex Luthor walking into just carrying a briefcase, walking into a lab, and it's like, dun, 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 and it's just, you're like, what? So yes, music is bad. Music is bad throughout this movie. I can't actually think of a good piece of music in this music, this movie, except for maybe the over the top but appropriately so Amazonian music that plays when Wonder Woman enters its fight. So on that note, thinking of like multiple times of the movie, you don't want to be laughing at the screen. Multiple times during this movie, the entire audience literally had no idea what was going on. Point. Batman is sitting at his computer, hacking this data, essentially, just hacking data. So he's seeing a progress bar move across his screen. So he's sitting there going, okay,
see there. World's greatest detective.
Yeah. He looks there, he goes 1%. Waits a bit longer, 2%. Suddenly, Batman is in a post-apocalyptic landscape in a trench coat, looking over at devastated Gotham. Goes down, has like a sweet ass fight and shit, and then it cuts to modern day. So I didn't know that that's like a 10-minute sequence. So for the first 3 minutes of a 10-minute sequence, we're like, did they just like miss? Was that like a? Did we just miss something? Was there like a cut somewhere, or like did it say? There was no context. There was no reason for you to suddenly be in the future. Is he dreaming? Because there's many dream sequences in this movie. Like, did he fall asleep while waiting for this progress bar? Is that what we're looking at here? And so he's in the future, goes to this shit. I might talk about that stuff later, like Darkseid, all that kind of thing, and then weird stuff that is intonated, but like soldiers with like Superman fucking like symbols on them and whatever. But then like it cuts. And then suddenly, like when that series ends with him like being about to be killed by an evil Superman, cuts to modern day again, and like lightning's all around him, and like some random person no one could recognize is like looking like he's running but still in space with like a warp around him, shouting like, "I made a mistake. I came too early. Lois is blah, 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 blah. You're right about blah, 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 blah." And then disappears. And the audience is like, was that the Flash? Like, as a person who is familiar with comic books, I was like, maybe that's the Flash. And that's the closest thing to any form of clarity I had because on the entire situation.
He can time travel.
He looked like he was wearing this suit that, yeah, he can time travel if he wears that suit.
But fucking Flash can't sneak into people's dreams in post-apocalyptic worlds. So no, that's not time
travel. It's like, was he just describing this future to Batman while he was envisioning this post-apocalyptic world? Did he actually have a vision? Was that real? And just like a image, like, what? I still to this day cannot tell you what that scene was or what it was indicating, whether it was an eventuality or a possible future or a, like, no idea. And at multiple points in this movie, there are moments where like when I turn to my friends going, what the fuck is happening? And they're like, I don't know. And we're comic book fans. Where people would know this kind of stuff. Like, I'd expect kind of crazy, stupid, dumb shit to happen. So that's bad.
It's so unfortunate that Zack Snyder loves graphic novels and comic books. It is actually so unfortunate for nerds that it is him of all people that has quote unquote director credibility, and he has to be the one directing these movies. That is so sad. DC has already planned out whatever movies into 2059, whatever, right? They're all either produced executively or directed by fucking Zack Snyder. They've already put out Justice League 2 for 2019 or whatever date, right? So there's guaranteed to be two Justice Leagues that are directed by this man, right? Yep. He's going to fucking produce the Aquaman movie, which did Aquaman have an exciting experience or a fucking appearance in this movie?
Oh my God.
He's going to be producing the Wonder Woman.
Do you know what? Okay, so for Thelma's benefit, I'm not sure if Noob knows. Halfway through this movie, they felt it was appropriate to essentially have 30-second trailers for every other movie that's coming out. Not fucking with you. Batman is sitting at a computer and he's clicking and there's like symbols on the screen because he hacked that database I was talking about earlier, right? And it's got like a lightning shaped symbol and like a C shaped symbol and like a some weird sword shaped symbol for, and he like clicks them. And no, sorry, the third one looks like the Wonder Woman symbol. And then it's like he clicks the Flash one. It's like this weird, like, I think he's like Mexican dude in the middle of nowhere. And he's like coming up to this fucking. So he's in like a 7-Eleven or whatever you call it, like a truck stop or whatever, and he's just picking up a drink from the thing, and like a shitty normal ass burglar goes in and starts holding up the guy at the counter, and then he like cuts, I don't know why it's on two cameras, it cuts back to him, and he like essentially you can see the move, you can see the trail on the camera because obviously it's the Flash, but it doesn't make sense because frame rate, but whatever. So you see the trail go off and you see him come back and he's standing there again, the rubber is like tied up or whatever, and then it cuts to the next one, which is like Wonder Woman, and it's like a picture of her in like 1918 looking at that was cool. And then it's like the last one was like Aquaman in the
First World War. Yeah,
for Aquaman it's like this happy little like little ocean explorer bot, and I'm obviously giving it that personality trait. But that's what it felt like, because it's just, you know, it's just chilling. It's just chilling. It's a little fucking like underwater explorer bot, and it's like going down to this, this cool shipwreck. I'm gonna look at this shipwreck. And so it looks in the shipwreck, and you see like glowing eyes in the darkness. And then you see Jason Momoa with long hair, and then it just like explodes, and that's the Aquaman like fucking intro.
Are you excited to watch a full feature anchored around this character?
Absolutely. I don't understand. I don't understand what it could be about that would be interesting. It's the same as I watched this. I knew it was bad going into it. I needed to see the train wreck. And then it had Cyborg. That made no sense. It was like, in the audience knows who the fuck Cyborg is.
Having read the graphic novel Low and like Bioshock, like you can tell a really cool story and just have a person, like one of the people, have cool powers that like isn't directly applicable to all of it, but he's just a badass person. Like you could make that movie.
Yeah.
They aren't going to make that movie though.
No. Namor is going to be some weird xenophobic asshole. And that's he destroyed a robot just because it was checking out a sweet ass fucking sunken ship. He seems just like a dude with anger management problems. Anyway, so like, and that's halfway through the movie. It's like, halfway through the movie, it feels like they're doing the ending cut from every Avengers movie, but all at once. It's like, everything's so. That's
before any of the character development. Before none of it's earned. No.
None of it's earned. Oh, yeah. Okay, so here's another thing. Like, awesome intro, right, with Bruce Wayne running through the city streets or whatever. We didn't mention that before that, you literally get the whole, he's a kid and he's walking at the fucking, exiting the theater with his parents, and his parents are going into the fucking alleyway.
I don't know Batman's origin story. I'm just paid, you know, $15 to go to this movie theater, and then $7 for popcorn, and another $5 for a drink. And I want to get a good, like, a fancy 3D glasses and a fancy seat, so I'm going to pay another $20.
After a whole trilogy of Batman movies, it's not even a twist. It's the same
what man movies?
Fucking, or just Batman movies.
Who's Christopher Nolan? I've never heard of him.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly.
I'm 10 years old. Yeah. I want to see cool stuff.
Joker? You mean like Jared Leto? He's the Joker, right?
And it's crazy. Like, this... such a huge missed opportunity I got so angry when they did that intro, that origin story, because it was like, you do not respect me as the audience. You do not respect my fucking intelligence of knowing who the fuck Batman is. Everyone knows who the fuck Batman is. It's Batman. I don't need that shit. Yeah, shit out of here. It not only does that, it intercuts it with him falling down the well and seeing bats. These are two things that have been played over and over and over again since like the fucking 60s or whatever the fuck it was. It's like, fuck you. Fuck you. But anyway, so not only is that a problem, but so the cool thing about this movie is Batman. The Batman is the star of this movie. It's called Batman vs. Superman, and that's kind of indicative because it is essentially Batman vs. Superman because Superman is played off really terribly. Like, it makes no sense. So, but anyway, get that later. Batman, this movie, gacks fools. Like, he's a different Batman than Christian Bale's Batman. Batman.
He's fucking he's like, he's bloodthirsty.
I can't remember who's the writer and the artist for the like the Dark Knight section of comics.
Frank Miller?
It might have been Greg Miller, yeah.
Frank Miller. I think it's Frank Miller, isn't it?
It's not Greg Miller.
It's not Greg Miller.
Frank, he loved, again, 300, Watchmen, those are Frank Miller fucking graphic novels. Yeah. I don't know about 300.
This is Frank Miller fanboy.
Yeah. He's a Frank Miller fanboy, and he constantly fucking ruins his work by Frank turning Miller them into shit movies. I'm so sorry, Frank Miller.
So there's a great moment in this movie where Batman is down, or just like he's being beaten down or whatever, and he walks to his costume. And he sees he's packing away his costume and he walks away from it. And you don't really see much of this room ever in the movie for whatever reason. But there's like an old costume of his that he'd previously worn that's in a display case. And in that costume, it's him with a sledgehammer or something. And spray painted to the costume is something along the lines of like the final laugh is mine or something. It's a callback to a series of comic books where through Joker's actions, like he breaks Batgirl's back. Oh, sorry, yeah, he paralyzes Batgirl and kills Robin. I think that's what he does. Through the Joker's actions, he finally gets to the point where he finally convinces Batman, you can keep sending me to prison, I'm going to keep getting out, and I'm going to keep killing the people you love. And it's going to happen over and over and over again, and the cycle's never going to finish. And he finally convinces Batman through that to say, you know what? I have to kill the Joker. And he kills the Joker. And it's the first person Batman ever kills, like directly, like with his hands, right? That moment is really powerful in the comic books. And this Batman, because it has that throwback, is essentially post that moment. This is the Batman who kills. This is the Batman who's been past the killing joke. This is Batman who is in a situation where he's fine with killing people. He says multiple times in this movie, like, no one can stay good forever. Or like, everyone turns bad. It's like along those lines.
You either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Exactly. Damn. The fact that they gave me his fucking childhood origin story instead of just a snippet of that. The fact that this is in a world post that, and he didn't give me that instead. Like, that's all the audience would have needed. That's literally just a moment of like Joker killing people and then him killing Joker. Like, that could have been that montage at the start. And that would have been amazing. It would be like, oh, this is a different Batman. This sets up this whole arc of who this is. And then the audience is no longer surprised when Batman's literally standing on top of a fucking crane with a sniper rifle. Like, it's, yeah, the weird shit happens in this movie. But yeah, there's many problems with the characterization. It seems so rushed. Like, everything in this movie is
Wouldn't it have been great if Zack Snyder directed Sin City? That would have been pretty good. Or not fucking, what is the movie? It's Sin City? I don't know what it's called. I already forgot the name of the movie. Nice?
What are you talking about?
No, what is it called?
Which one are you talking
about? Yeah, Sin City. That's the name of, yeah, the movie. Sin City. Yeah. That's based off of what is it?
Frank Miller, yeah.
Frank Miller. Yeah. Imagine
that was a good movie.
If Zack Snyder directed that movie.
No. It would have been so great.
Imagine Bruce Willis with a sniper rifle. Oh wait, that's just
Bruce
the Jackal.
Willis.
I'm sorry, that's
with
just
a
the
kryptonite
Jackal. That's the Jackal.
Jackal was good. Jackal was a good
amazing
movie.
Movie.
Red was also a good movie. Who did Zack make Red? I like Red. Red was cool.
Zack Snyder did not make Red, though.
No. What else?
Okay, before we end off, can we just talk about how fucked DC is and their DC comic universe?
It all comes down to the last moment of what. Point I want to hit is rushing. So they rush Batman. They rushed Wonder Woman because she's got barely any intro. You just see the one picture. Literally, her backstory in this movie is the one picture. You don't even know where she's from. You don't even know she's Amazonian. You don't even know, like, you don't know anything about Wonder Woman at all, except for that one picture you see for her in 1918. She even says at the end of the movie, I've left humanity for 100 years. Are you a Kryptonian? I don't fucking... You seem to be as strong as a Kryptonian. I don't know what your backstory is. Are you just a fucking freaky Amazon lady who's just crazy strong and lives forever?
You gotta watch the Wonder Woman vehicle film.
So yeah, so not only do they rush all of the heroes they introduce in this movie, they also rush the entire timeline of DC. Why? Because no, Thurbleton, they don't form the Super Friends at the end because Superman dies. Because Superman dies in this fucking movie. And not only does Superman die, but they felt the need and had the goal to not only set up the next movie's villain, but two movies worth of villains.
Okay.
They had goal. So that stupid future flashback of fucking Batman in the post-apocalyptic universe, that's Injustice, which is evil Superman. So Superman comes off the grave as an evil dude and everyone has to stop him. And then during that flashback, as like a side thing, you see these flying creature things that like picking up people and tossing them around and shit. And there's like multiple like images of this stupid, like this beautiful but stupid in this context painting of like angels coming from above and like demons coming from below. And then like you just have this crazy thing with Lex Luthor switches around or whatever.
Constantine is there like, too or something? I don't
know. They're setting up Darkseid. So essentially, they're saying, so Justice League 1 is going to be evil Superman, and Justice League 2 is going to be Darkseid. Sign up, guys. Buy your tickets now. Pre-order. You can get pre-order DLC for these shitty movies coming up soon.
Augment your Justice League pre-order.
They kill off Superman in this movie. That's how rushed this is. Like, the fact that Doomsday in this... Angry Joe said it well. Like, the fact that they had Doomsday in this movie should have tipped me off, but it's like the Nintendo thing with no buttons. It's so dumb from an overall like world-building context that no one even considered that Superman would die in this movie. There was no way for that to happen because it makes no sense. You're killing off... He only had one movie. Superman only had one movie. And it was a bad one that not many people actually liked. And then they already killed him off. And they're already bringing him back because obviously it's Superman. So at the end of the movie, they didn't have the fucking balls to make it look like he was permanently dead. At the end of the movie, like dust starts floating from his coffin. Like it's just like you can't do anything right. You can't. You're rushing everything. You've set up multiple superheroes that no one cares about without giving them their own movies. Wonder Woman didn't get her movie before this. You didn't get to introduce the new Batman before this movie. Nothing's right. It's all terrible. Lex is terrible too, by the way.
I almost wonder if it's the thing of like they are maybe thinking that this superhero thing, like it's the whole Marvel, like we're in phase two of Marvel right now and they have phase three. Do they have a phase four? Are they even thinking that there's going to be a phase four? Or do you think that like a lot of the major stories are going to be finished by then? And also like the whole fad of comic book hero, like that's going to maybe dip down or maybe like they're going to revamp them up again or something.
Their Marvel is trajectory towards space. So they're going to do space stuff. So I'm not sure if that's a three or four, but they're definitely going to have Guardians and everything else mix into one big universe. That's in the future day. I don't know when.
Okay.
But basically what I'm saying is maybe they're just trying like their DC is predicting that, oh, if we need to get all of our movies done by 2017 or something, or like 2025.
Yeah.
So we can only fit like four or five movies. Just kill them off now and then get the other big jumps in there. I don't know.
It's like, and part of that is like the big problem, right? Where in Marvel you have character development, you have character movies, a bunch of character movies, and the idea of them all being connected doesn't cross your mind.
Yeah.
This is a vehicle for them being like, oh, it's happening, guys, it's happening. You got to watch all these movies first, but it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And it's like, there's, again, it's like you said it, it's like, they're sticking in Justice League halfway into a development film for these characters. And it's everything is rush. And I'll go back to like why Man of Steel is so awful and it's shit and this entire DC thing is not going to work is you can go two ways with these comic book movies as you can go with sort of like comic books themselves is you can have the fun sort of tongue-in-cheek sort of exciting adventure kind of films that Marvel movies are. Apparently there's this movie is devoid of all humor and sort of charm, and that was definitely what the case
it's
with
the
Man
much
of Steel.
More serious
it was
comic
just like
book story
exactly serious comic. It's like you can have serious movies as we've seen with Christopher Nolan's
Batman.
But the thing is, you have to have them focused on developing your characters along with the darkness, etc. You can't just have exploding fucking buildings and
people
expect that
didn't
to work.
Love those movies because they were dark. People love those movies because you could see like Batman
developing characters. Develop. Exactly. Batman change and sort of what happens to him. And what they've done is they've taken the grandiose sort of explosions and sort of ridiculous, like the visual aspects of superhero movies, and then they've sucked all the color out, and then they took the edginess and the darkness of those movies and they didn't realize they just left the core elements that made each of those individual sides work, and they've left that out entirely.
This
and
movie
what
had
you
no
have
heart.
Is sort of you it has no heart and it has no characters, and it just it's sort of like a shell of what a superhero movie at worst would be, and that's the sad part.
But even like characters that should have been puff piece characters, like Batman saves this dude from the rubble of his fallen towers, right? And the dude loses his legs. That dude turns out to be like this ultra hateful dude who like fucking scribbles crazy like death notes to Superman and shit, and then ends up like essentially blowing up during this trial, a court trial case. Like the only cool character in this movie, aside from Wonder Woman, was this senator who's actually like fully in the right this whole time. Like, not necessarily like her stance was that Superman needs to answer to law, but she wasn't saying he must answer to law. She was saying we should have a hearing to decide whether we as a country are willing to take this step and create a law base around these superhumans. Like she was a very progressive thinker. She talked sass to Lex Luthor, and that was awesome. She was like a really cool, like country, like a farm bred woman who's like a totally powerful character, and they kill her off in this movie. The explosion, she's just dead.
Like, people need to die.
Even the few characters you want to see keep going.
It's like, they took all of the wrong things out of these movies. They're rushing this entire franchise just to copy Marvel. They're trying to copy the success of
in the wrong way.
And they're copying the success of the Marvel movies, and they're doing it in the exact opposite way of what makes them special. And again, it's like the nail in the coffin for this franchise is that they pick Zack Snyder, who is good at making things look, you know, like 300 is a stylistically beautiful movie. Like there are shots in that are iconic, right? He does not make a character compelling characters and nor
what is
does
the character of Leonidas? He's angry.
Exactly. That's he's it. Angry. And he's like, and then, or B, he doesn't, his movies have no heart. They have no charm. They're not likable. And that's not, if you don't have either of those things, you can't make your movie work, especially if it's something like a superhero movie where it's either about character development or some like excitement.
At the end of this movie, I didn't care about any of the characters except for Alfred at all. Alfred was cool, but everyone else was like, I don't care if you live. Yeah. And then can I for the love of God, have a moment to say like some of the plot holes? Like just one or two. No, but not even plot holes. Just the parts that made me laugh at the screen.
Okay.
Thurbleton, can you guess why Batman and Superman stopped fighting? Double noob, do you know the answer to this question?
I know the answer.
They
teamed up together.
They
why
stopped
they
fighting
stopped
each other. Because Wonder Woman showed up and started fighting whatever the big thing is, Doomsday? Is that it? And they're like, oh, we should both go help her.
She's a
woman and can't handle the fight by herself.
That's a fantastic theory. That's a beautiful theory. Would you have guessed their mothers have the same name?
Oh God!
That's the answer. Would you guess that is the answer? turns out the whole reason, because it was conspicuous, the whole reason at the start of the movie they had their full playthrough of the death of his mother is because as part of that movie there's a whole set, like a good 30 seconds put to the part where Bruce Wayne's father, like, he's like on the floor and like points to his mother and she says, "Martha," and then it replays that moment during that scene because Superman's on the ground and Batman's over him with like the kryptonite spear above him, and he's like, "I'm gonna kill you," and Superman's like, "No, you're letting Martha die," because Lex Luthor obviously kidnapped Martha, his mother, and Batman's like, "Martha, why did you say that name?" And Lois Lane's like, "Because his mother's named Martha, just like yours." And he's like, "Oh,
wait,
best friends now." And they're best friends.
Wait, how does Lois Lane know Batman is?
No. I think she says, "Because his mother's name is Martha." And then Batman realizes, "Oh, he's got the same mother's name as me, and I'm tortured soul, and then therefore I'm your best friend." Like literally a half an hour later, he saves Superman's mom. Batman saves Superman's mom. And he's like, I'm one of Clark's friends. And she's like, "I know you are."
We're ending this now.
Because your mom has the same name. It's like a 6-year-old. It's like 6-year-old logic.
No, thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye. This is it. Bye.
Ooh, shit.